जयं विश्वकान परमहंस परिभ्राताचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमान अभयचरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम नित्यलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिभ्राताचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंद All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhudale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminidhi Namini. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prajarini Narvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarini. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय संसार सागरे मग्नम दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मग्राहकहीदांगं मां उद्धर भवार्णवान् श्रीमद्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्षकृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं मम सागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफलः सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोर्सव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नु यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनम् प्रणामो दुःखशमन तं नमामि हरिं परं जन्माद्यस्य यदोन्वयादिगरदश्चार्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वरात् तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिगवये मुह्यन्ति यत्सूरय तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तभगं सत्यं वरं धीमहि धर्मप्रोज्झितगैरवोत्रपरमो न मत्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदम् तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किम्वापरैरीश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यते यत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तल्क्षणात् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितम् फलम् शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसंयुतम् विपदभागवतम् रसमालयम् मुकुरहोरसिया भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विशोल्पत्यादिहेतवे तावत्त्रयविनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नमः यम् प्रव्रजन्तमनुवेदमभेदकृत्यम् द्वैवाहिनो विरहगादरमाच्युहाव पुत्रेति तन्मयदयतरवोऽभिनेतु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनिमानतोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपमतिर्दीर्षदान्तमोन्धम् संसारिणाम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूनुमुपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम् नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरे कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदाघ्रदाननेन्दोः मम उपाशीशं वदां मुरारे मधुरीं न कनिगापि कापि कापि नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूदरे श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे दूरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशधारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्टश यासां हरिगतोद्गीतं पुनादिभुवनत्रयं गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरं गरविराजे शङ्खचक्रं कौमोदकेसरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायमतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं पाताले शमनिशं हृदि भावयामि कोमलं पूजयन् वेणुं श्यामलवयं कुमारक वेदवेद्यपरं ब्रह्म वासदां पुरतो मम मूकं करोति वाजालं भङ्गं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीमति राधिकायै नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्द नाम संकीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितं भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिनां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणि नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे कुल्लारविन्दायनपथनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीप प्रपन्नवैजाताय त्वत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावोदोक्ता गोपालनन्दना पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं विश्वद्रोणतटाजयद्रजलागान्धारनीलोत्पल शल्यग्राहवदी कृपेणोहनी कर्णेन वैराकुल अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सुतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरण नदी कैवर्तक केशव पराशरिवज सरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानकेसरं हरिकदा सम्बोधनाबोधितं लोकैः सज्जनशल्पदैरहरहप्येबीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिन श्रेयसे मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्कुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपादमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवैर्वेदैः साङ्गपदैः क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थितद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुसुरासुरगणैः देवाय तस्मै नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द योऽन्तः प्रविश्य मम वाचमिमां प्रसुप्तां सञ्जीवयत्यखिल शक्तिधरस्वधाम्नाम् अन्यांशहस्तचग्नश्रूणां त्वगादीन् प्राणान्नमो भगवते पुरुषाय तुभ्यं भूतिर्महद्ब्रेमा पुरो विभो निर्माय शैतीयदमूषु पुरुष भुङ्क्ते गुणान् षोडशषोडशात्मकं सोऽलं कृषीष्ट भगवान् वजांसि मे प्रह्लादनारद पराशर पुण्डरेक व्यासं वरेष शुक शौनक भीष्मदाभ्यान् रुक्माङ्गदार्जुन वसिष्ठ विभीषणादीन् पुण्यानि मान् परमभागवतान् स्मरामि discussing this Brahmastuti in the sixth chapter where Krishna appeared there and then demigods were told to make friendship with the demons and together they worked hard for churning the milk ocean. And that's what is discussed. And Brahmaji, Lord Brahma is talking about the glorifying Hari Krishna, and we were looking at the verse 10 there, that famous verse from the Upanishads. Toyyavam asi, toy madhyam asi, toyyandam asi idam almatantram, tum adi rando bhagajagadosya madhyam, ghatasya marsneva para parasmat. This whole manifestation of material creation, it gives us the experience of the truth behind it. That means Krishna is behind it, Antaryami or Sachidananda Brahman is behind it, and his reality is what we are experiencing in this creation. It says here, this whole creation, Sachidananda Brahman is totally independent. It's not controlled by anything. It exists all the time. But the world comes in front of us, stays for some time, and then it disappears. That's the relationship with Maya. When Maya comes, the world comes. When Maya comes, the world comes. But Sachidananda Brahman remains permanent, untouched by anything. But when Maya appears, the manifestation of the world comes. And because Krishna is behind, or Sachidananda Brahman is behind, it is in him that all this is happening. In the beginning, the middle and the end, And how it is spoken, Ghatasya Visneva Parasmat Parastvam Asya Jagati Adi Madhyam Antanja Bhavasi. Means that, suppose this is a famous example, it is all the time in Upanishads as well as in the, you will see Shiva Brahma, she used that in the Brahma Upadesham also, the same example. He says, the earthen pot, in the beginning there was only earth, clay, in other words, right? And then the pot came, and then again it became clay. In a similar way, from Pradhanam came this Maya Pradhanam, and Pradhanam came this, Pradhanam means stable condition, when there is no, when the three modes of material nature is balanced state, that's Pradhanam. And from when it got agitated by Kalam, time has agitated that, and then the Rajogunam came up and creation came. So, but Sachidananda Brahmam is beyond all this. He is the ultimate cause of everything, but it is his presence in the Maya that makes this creation happens. Creation, Maya cannot create anything on its own unless it is backed up by Sachidananda Brahmam. So Brahmam enters into Maya, and with the help of Brahmam, Maya starts creation, or creation happens in front of us, and then it stays for some time, and then eventually it disappears into Maya and goes back again, right? So, karanam karyam, cause and effect, right? Without karanam, karyam cannot exist. That is the fundamental rule. Cause is required for anything to have an effect. So, karyam is the end result of karanam. Karanam is important thing. So, therefore, karyam is not important, creation is not important, Brahmam is important. That is the conclusion. So, that is what is spoken in this also. In the beginning, there was only clay, and later on it became the pot. But still the pot is made of clay. Even though it has taken a form, but it is made of clay. And it is not different from clay. And even the pot is broken, what remains is clay. What remains is clay. So the pot is in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end is clay, still clay, right? Similarly, before the creation happened, there was only Sachidananda Brahmam. And when the world came out through Maya, there was nothing else except Sachidananda. So that's why they say that the world is also Sachidanandam, because it has come from Sachidanandam. And when the world disappears one day, what remains is Sachidanandam, pure Sachidanandam. Right? So, in the middle, so what is happening is that there was Sachidanandam in the beginning, then the world has come, and then the world disappears and the Sachidanandam remains. So, because in the beginning and in the end there is only Sachidanandam, in the middle also there can be only Sachidanandam. This is the conclusion of the Vedantam. They are very important. All these things are very important, because you may think that, oh, what is this big deal about all this, talking about a clay pot, and which is nothing, isn't it, a clay pot after all. So, but the logic you have to understand behind it, what Krishna is saying, the same, the verse in the Charishlogi, first verse. Aham evasam eva grey. I was there in the beginning, I was there at the end, so in the middle also there is only me. This is the logic in that first verse. Aham evasam eva grey. Na anyil sadasal param paschad aham yade yadacha yo avashishyata sosmiham. That verse, if you analyze, this is what that means. It's the same logic. In the beginning, Krishna was there. At the end also, there is, so Krishna is there. So in the middle, there is only Krishna. There is nothing else. This is the argument. Yeah. So, and so similarly, pure Sachidananda was there in the beginning, and in the middle it appears in front of us in the form of this creation. And this can be understood by this logic. So, this creation we are experiencing now, this world, we are experiencing it, isn't it? And when we look at this world, it is variety here, isn't it? In creation, there is variety. Millions and millions of species, and millions of names and millions of forms. Such a big variety there. But this variation or variety, what you are experiencing in the creation, is nothing but Maya. Maya has created it like that. Maya created the variegatedness or variety. It's a creation of Maya. Pure Sachidananda Brahma means pure consciousness. At the end also there is only pure consciousness, right? So, Maya appears in the Sachidananda Brahma, and Sachidanandam has entered into Maya, and this is why, this is the nature of this creation. So, Maya appeared first, and from Maya came the creation, and then Sachidanandam entered into the creation through Maya. And this is the nature of the creation, right? And this variegatedness in the creation is due to the Namam and Rupam, which comes from Maya. Maya creates all the Namarupam, right? And they are all temporary. Maya created this, but it is not permanent. You can see all the Namarupam names and forms here. They are not permanent, are they? They just come. We came in one form, somebody else came in some other form. Somebody came in the form of trees, somebody came in the form of birds, somebody came in the form of animals and aquatics and flies and so many different forms it has come, right? So it is Namarupam that is creating this variegatedness, variety here, right? And one thing you have to remember, they are all temporary. They have no permanent existence, therefore they are not the truth. Namarupam is not the truth, right? They were born at some time, we were like us, we were born at one time, and we will stay like this for some time, and then we will disappear. This Namarupam will go. So all Namarupam is like that, doesn't stay permanently, right? They don't have an existence of its own. Yeah. So when you look at that, you can see that we are not real in that sense. This name and form is not real. The world is not real, right? Because by definition of the truth, reality, what Krishna has defined in the Bhagavad Gita, that the nature of the absolute truth is it should not change, it should remain as it is, and it has neither birth nor death, right? So, therefore, everything else is Maya's pratibhasam, it is what we are experiencing here. So, due to the presence of Maya, we are feeling that this is all real. We feel like that. But this Namarupam, what it does is, it puts a cover on the Sachidanandam. We are also Sachidanandam, but we are not feeling we are Sachidanandam. We feel that we are Namarupam. Yeah. So, Sachidanandam, actually our identification is Sachidananda Brahma. We are also Sachidanandam. But Namarupam puts a cover on us, on the Sachidanandam, right? So, therefore, unable to see Sachidanandam which is hiding within the Namarupam, within the Namarupam, right? But the Sachidanandam realization, who has, that we are also Sachidananda Brahma, for them, Namarupam, they know how to avoid the Namarupam. They can see that all Namarupam in this world, they will be able to see the Sachidanandam in that, rather than the Namarupam. We see Namarupam. realize the soul, see the Satchidananda in everything. In everything. So that is a big difference. Self-realized state and conditioned state. So, in just like they are able to see the world separately from Namarupam, pure Satchidanandam in everything, they will recognize themselves also that they are pure Satchidanandam. Themselves, they know that. This is talking about realized state, fully realized state, right? So, in order to come to that vision, or that state of realization, or to see everything in the Satchidananda Swarupam, the avidya inside us, ajnanam or avidya, what is inside us, has to go first. Avidya has to leave us, right? Which means, what is avidya means? I am this body. That avidya has to leave us, right? And for that, we have to get Krishna's mercy. And therefore, we have to do the sadhana for that. So, when we have done enough sadhana, through sadhana, by Krishna's mercy, when we receive that, we are also Satchidanandam. We are also Satchidanandam. And we get established in that state. And it is at that time we will be able to see the Namarupam in this world. Namarupam, you remember, name and form, right? Namarupam, we will be able to see at that time, not through as Namarupam, but as Satchidanandam. And that vision what we get, Chakshusa vision we get, and the knowledge also we will have it at that time. When that situation happens, right? Actually, to understand all this, you got to study Ekadasha Skandam well. Then Krishna talks about it in detail to Uddhava. Few verses there he mentions that that when a person is he is making this point very clear to us that till there is realization in a person, all these explanation won't help. Explanation can only give you some understanding of it, but till that realization comes, you won't understand what is being spoken. To a large extent, Krishna is talking about it to Uddhava. Uddhava asked this question to Krishna, very explicitly asked this question. And Krishna explained that to him also. Yeah. So, these are the same examples in the Upanishads also, right? Mrityagatyeva satyam. Clay alone is the truth, not the pot, right? Before the pot was created, clay was there. At the end also, when the pot is destroyed, clay remains, right? So, all the time it's actually clay, but sometimes it's in a name and form. Similarly, before the creation happened, there was only Satchidanandam, Brahman. And then, in that Satchidanandam, Brahman, Maya appeared. And Maya is nothing but unlimited names and forms it created. And Satchidananda Brahman is present in the Maya because it is in Satchidananda Brahman Maya has manifested, right? So, because Satchidananda Brahman is present in Maya, Maya got the capacity to transform itself in the form of creation. So, this power of Maya to become like the world in present front of us today is because of the presence of Satchidananda Brahman in the Maya. In this way, in everything that is created by Maya, Satchidanandam is present in that, right? So, Maya is nothing but a pratibhasam. Pratibhasam means it's apparent reality. It's not real. It's an apparent reality, right? It doesn't have reality. It's an apparent reality. You know what that means? Is apparent reality means it's not real, but at the same time it can give you a feeling of reality. Kalpana, you can say like that, yeah. Kalpana is a little different. It means that Maya is gives you an experience that it's real. It's not we have created. Kalpana is when you create something. But Maya has the capacity to give us the impression that she is real. What she has done is all real things. In reality, it is not so. Right? Because it is created. Why it is not real? Because it's been created one day. Maya has created it. And it stays for some time. And then the end, it disappears. So therefore, it's not real. That's the logic behind it. Right? Mithya Pratibhasam, it called it. Mithya Pratibhasam, right? Only you will feel all these things real because of the presence of Sachidanandam there. And that's all. You feel that its world is real because of the presence of Sachidanandam in the creation. That's all. So even when the creation happened, in reality, what is actually giving the feeling of reality to this world is Sachidanandam present in the world. Which means that Sachidananda means which doesn't change, it remains as it is, and that existence. That is called Sachidanandam. And Sachidanandam has only got the reality. Absolute reality is only Sachidanandam. Right? So therefore, even when this creation has come like this from Maya, in strictly speaking, there is only Sachidanandam here in this creation also. And the creation also, when at the end, when the devastation happens, it eventually, the whole thing goes back into Maya again, like the way it has come from Maya. The reverse process starts, isn't it? You know that elements all go back into one after the other, back from earth to water, to fire, to air, to space, and back to Brahman again. At that time, Maya is finished. Maya is over, right? So, ultimately, pure Sachidanandam exists, and that Sachidanandam is in the world in the way we are seeing now. Sachidanandam alone is the truth, or Krishna is only the reality. That is what Brahmaji is saying. Lord Brahma is saying Krishna is the only reality. Everything else is product of Maya. Product of Maya. That is that verse. Toyagram asil, toyamadhyam asil, toyandam asididam almatantre, tomadirando jagadosya madhyam, gadasya marsneva paraparasmad. If you study all these things, you will understand what Krishna is saying to Uddhava later. But if we ignore all these things, then when you read Krishna's instructions to Uddhava also, it won't make any sense. Generally, people have that tendency to ignore all the important parts in the Bhagavatam. They're just thinking Bhagavatam is a storybook. Bhagavatam is not a storybook. Bhagavatam is very sound philosophy of Upanishads brought back into. Only thing is, it is spoken in a different way to make it a little bit more interesting, in the sense that katha, studi, upadesham, in that way it's spoken. But strictly speaking, Bhagavatam is studi and upadesham. Particularly studi. It is in the studi you find upadesham is on a very higher level. That requires, if you are very well grounded in the studi, then upadesham will become much more interesting. You will see the truth in the upadesham. In other words, when you hear the upadesham, you will feel the truth, how strongly it is spoken in the upadesham. But if you have not studied Sudhi, and if you have not studied upadesham also, Bhagavatam will remain simply as a storybook, katha. And then everything, after some time, you will start thinking, is this all true? What is it in the Bhagavatam? That situation will happen. That has happened to many devotees. It's unfortunately, it is like that. They are not able to connect with Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam has to go. There is a system. in the Bhagavatam. And the system is like this, Katha, Stuti, Upadesham. We have discussed this many times. That Stutis are, most of them are Stutis in the Bhagavatam. See now, when we started 8th canto, how many Stutis have already come? Swayambhu Stuti came, Gajendra Stuti came, Brahma Stuti came. Brahma comes second time again, is another Stuti now. So Stuti after Stuti is in the whole of 8th canto. And it is through the Stuti that the right understanding of things are given, in the sense that about creation, about the Maya, both are important. Unless we understand something about Maya, it is difficult to understand anything about Krishna. That what is Krishna's position in relationship with Maya? That's what Brahmaji is talking about. Krishna's position in relationship with Maya. Krishna is Sachidanandam. And Maya is a manifestation in front of us. And we are in the caught up in the middle of all that. Like we saw there, yesterday, last time, that sky is the most subtle of all. Right? And why is more, although because it's a space everywhere, so sky, but at the same time it's the most subtle of all. Why? Because it doesn't have a form. Like air, it doesn't have a form. And it cannot be sensed by perception, sense perception. You can't say where is the space beginning, where does it end, we don't know. So neither beginning nor end, we don't know about the space, right? So then Bhagavatam is saying, more subtle than the space is Brahmam. It's more subtle than the space. Agasham has come from Brahmam, Sachidananda Brahm. And Agasham or space is the most subtle of all the elements. More subtle of all the elements. Now, what is the difference between Agasham and Brahmam then? Agasham has come from Brahmam. Agasham, or Agasham in space, Agasham has a limitation also. What is that? It is limited by time, kala. One day space will also disappear into Sachidananda Brahmam. Whereas Brahmam is not touched by time or space. Kala desham, that kala desha limitation, time and space limitation doesn't exist in the Brahmam. Whereas space is limited by time. Out of the two, kalam and desham is not. Space is everywhere. So desham is not limitation factor on the agasham. That is why Brahmam is more subtle than the agasham. More than the space. Yeah. This is the reason behind that. Yeah. So all these things we have to think and think about it more and more. So then it becomes a lot easier when Krishna's teachings comes to Uddhava later on. If you don't absorb all these things, when Krishna starts talking about, because Krishna doesn't explain it in detail, it's all in the Stutis, everything. In different Stutis, it has come out before. So, if you carry this knowledge, what is in the Stutis, to Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, you'll find that you'll be able to relate with it much better. Otherwise, not. So, Toyagramasil, Toyimadhyamasil. Ultimately, Bhagavadam is nothing but Upanishad's knowledge. As you know, at the end, isn't it? Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimal Bhagavadam Ishyade. It is there in the end of the 12th canto. Twice is Sudha Goswami has repeated that. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Srimal Bhagavadam Ishyade. He says, Srimal Bhagavadam is the Vedanta Saram, essence of all the Vedanta, isn't it? So, Brahma Maigatva Lakshanam is saying there. Kaivalyega Prayojanam. All those things are very clear instructions. If you have a little bit of, what he is saying there, that Brahmal, yad Brahmal Aigatva Lakshanam, Vastu Addiriyam Tannishtam Kaivalyega Prayojanam. He has spoken that in the 11th verse. And it's in the 12th verse, I think. Yeah. So, it says here, is the essence of all the Vedantam, and it also talks about the oneness of the individual soul with the super soul, or that's the way super soul and all. What it says is, Andaryami Swarupam is our Swarupam also, right? And Jivalpa and Paramatma is actually one. They are not two. They are actually one. And it talks about what this liberation is all about. Sarva Vedanta Saramyat Brahmam Atma Aigatva Lakshanam. Oneness of Brahmam and Atma. Brahmatma Aigatva Lakshanam. Vastu Advidiyam Tan Nishtam Kaivalega Prayojanam. He said. And then again he said, 15th word, Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Sri Bhagavata Mishyade Tadrasyal Amrita Truptasya Na Anyatrasyal Radhi Kochil. That once you have absorbed this Vedanta Saram, Sri Bhagavatam Ishade, which is called as Srimad Bhagavatam, it is like drinking the nectar. Once you have tasted nectar, then you don't want to taste anything else. Tadrasal amrita truptasya na anyatrasyal yadi kochil. You won't have any attraction for that. What he's saying is, with this realization of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will not be asking another question after that. What next? No, there is no more questions. Finished. Jinyasa is over then. Because you have realized what the truth is. Otherwise we keep asking, isn't it? What is? We hear something and then we think, can it be like this? Can it be like that? We will keep on asking questions in this world. That questions business come to an end with that. So, that's what he is saying here. So that's why this is all important in that sense. Then, in the next verse, he's saying, because we gave this example of the clay take the form of pot and then it becoming a clay, what the doubts comes from that? This next verse, you see. Tvam maya atma shrayaya swayedam Nirmaya Vishwam Tadanyu Pravishtaha Pashyandi Yukta Manasa Manishino Gunavyavayepya Gunam Vibaschida. That he, with this Yoga Maya, with the help of Yoga Maya, creation has happened and he has entered into it, right? So you can see that creation happens due to changes in the modes of nature. But this clarity, that is, Sachidananda Brahmam does not change. That means self-realized souls realize that Sachidananda Brahmam is not affected due to the presence of Maya. You see, the definition of the truth is, it should not change, isn't it? What Krishna has spoken, yeah? It shouldn't change. If it changes, it's not the truth. So, self-realized people know this, that Sachidananda Brahmam has not changed. Maya has appeared though. So that problem always comes, right? So they say that the change has happened or the appearance of Maya has not had any effect on Sachidanandam. Sachidanandam remains as Sachidanandam, even though Maya has created this world. In other words, Maya is not real. It's an experience what we have at the moment through the senses, and therefore we take it as very seriously. And so this creation is very real. The body is real. We think like that, isn't it? You can't deny totally that it is this relationship with Maya and Brahmam. It's a difficult thing to explain that. Because Brahmam, Sachidananda Brahmam, does not go through any changes. That's why it is the truth, right? But what Maya comes in, that means Sachidananda Brahmam has changed. People will think like that. So how can you say Sachidananda Brahmam is the truth? You can't. So therefore, that is why it is clarified here, that even though Maya has appeared and all these Namarupams have happened, creation happened, and it is maintained, and we are in this Maya's world, and we see the world is real, and all this experience we have, Therefore, how can you say that the Maya, the Brahman has not changed? So an answer to that says here that Maya is a product of three modes, isn't it? Three modes of nature is Maya. So three modes of nature can change. That's what my world has come from, right? So those intelligent and self-realized souls, they accept that no changes actually happened in the Sachidananda Brahma. No changes happened in the Sachidananda Brahma. Maya created this feeling for us now, this experience of reality, what we feel. Maya has created it in front of us. That's all it is. Nothing more than that. So if you think and think about it, you will understand how difficult it is to understand Maya. How Maya succeeded in creating this experience for us in this world of its existence. And due to that, how much we are a part of that, isn't it? So much suffering because of that, what Maya has done. And sometimes you get some happiness also out of it. And we are so busy with this Maya, thinking that it is giving me happiness and it's giving me distress also. And then all these great personalities, they are all fighting each other inside this Maya. But they don't know that they are in the Maya. But they are fighting. And one trying to tell the other, you are wrong, I am right. And somebody else is saying, you are wrong, I am right. And this way they are arguing. And this process is going on continuously in this creation, isn't it? It's amazing how this process is working all the time. And it's a big topic, isn't it? It's just a mind-boggling. It is this Maya's trying to understand Maya. Yeah. So that is what he is saying there in that 11th verse, right? So nature of Sachidananda Brahman. When I say Sachidananda Brahman, you can take it like this: either Brahmeri, Paramatmeri, Bhagavan, Shabdade, Krishna, or Brahman or Paramatma, whichever way you call it. So truth is one. Right, and he is always independent. He is not touched by Maya, and untouched by Maya. But Brahman requires the support of Maya in order that all these incarnations has to happen, pastimes has to happen. In all that, Maya's support is required. It is through Maya everything is happening. Otherwise, if you say that incarnations are all coming from Krishna directly, that means Krishna is changing then. Sachidananda Brahman is changing, is it not? That means that rule cannot be applied then. The unchanging truth is changing. So therefore, Sachidananda Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, no change happens there. But Maya comes in only with presence of Maya. There can't be incarnations, there can be pastimes. That's the explanation for that, right? And that is the reason why he said there, Toyyandam asididam Almatandram. Almatandram means that. In the 10th verse, second line. Toyyandam asididam Almatandram. Almatandram means, Almatandram is what is spoken about Sachidananda Brahman, that Krishna is spoken as Almatandram for this reason only, that with the help of Maya, he conducts all the pastimes, incarnations, everything. And similarly, this creation, maintenance, dissolution, everything what's happening here is because it is dependent on him. It is due to his presence only. And that is why the Upanishad verses, Yatova Imani Bhudani Jayande, there is a famous verse which is quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada has quoted that verse. Yatova Imani Bhudani Jayande, all Bhudam has come, all living entities have come from him. It's dependent on him, right? So, from whom this creation comes out, from whom the creation comes out, and on whom this creation depends, and to whom this creation goes back. As I said, if you remember this creation process well, then it is easy to go along with it, right? That creation process we have seen in the second, third canto and fourth canto, how it comes out. And then when devastation happens, the whole thing goes back into Maya. And finally, Maya goes back into Brahma. In other words, the way Maya appeared, the same way Maya disappears also. Maya appeared at some point, and at some point Maya disappears also. Right? And in whom it has come and to whom it disappears, that is Sachidananda Brahma. And before Maya came, Sachidananda Brahma was there. And from him creation came. So therefore, creation cannot exist just by Maya alone. Creation can only exist if Sachidananda Brahma is behind it, right? So therefore, he maintains this creation. And so the first thing what is created is Maya. First Maya is created, Maya comes, right? And Krishna, Sachidananda Brahma enters into Maya. And then when Sachidananda Brahma enters into Maya, Maya gets the capacity to keep changing, to change, right? And then Maya has changed from then on, after Sachidananda has entered into Maya. And whenever Maya has changed, in all that, in the changes of Maya, what has happened? Everywhere, Brahma is present in everything. So, in other words, it is Sachidananda Brahma that is the foundation of Maya as well. Maya as well, right? So, in other words, Krishna is maintaining this creation. And finally, it goes back to Krishna. And beginning, middle and the end, all these things are happening in Maya. And that beginning, middle of the end is what we call it as creation, maintenance and dissolution. Srishti, Sthiti, Samhara. Right? And they can only happen if Sachidananda Brahma is behind it. Right? So, while this creation is happening, or in other words, the creation is developing from Maya, and similarly, while creation remains like this for a long period of time, and finally, when the creation all withdraws, goes back into Maya again, Sachidananda Brahma remains without any change, right? Without any change it remains. And whether the creation has come or gone, it doesn't matter. Sachidananda Brahma is unaffected by anything. So, in this way, at the beginning, middle, at the end, Krishna is present as always as pure Sachidanandam. Pure Sachidanandam, right? Before the pot was created, the clay was there. Then the clay turned out in the form of a pot. And when the pot is broken, it goes back into clay again. So when all these things have happened, the clay is not affected. Clay remains clay. In the beginning, at the end, and in the middle also, it remains in the form of pot. So in the same way, this about this creation also. In this way, Pradhanam or Prakriti also in the same way operates with the Paramatma. That's the way it operates with the Paramatma. And he is being controlled by, Prakriti is controlled by Brahmam. Brahmam remains as he is, and that is what the fourth verse is. Ghadasya mrsneva paraparastad. It says, Ghadasya mrsneva paraparastad. In other words, it doesn't have a beginning, middle, and the end, or the what we call as the creation, maintenance, and the dissolution, right? This all can happen only if Brahma is present. Without that, Maya cannot do it. This is the relationship with Maya and Brahma. It's a very strange situation. On the one side we say Brahmam is the truth. Satchidananda Brahmam is the truth. And truth is something what Krishna defines as which does not change. If anything changes, then it's not the truth. And it should remain as it is from beginning, middle and the end. And because it's not changing, it doesn't have any birth either. And because it doesn't get destroyed, so it remains without any changes. You see, anything that changes means that six changes, what we normally talk about. Satparinamam, the six changes, right? That is not applicable to Satchidananda Brahma. So therefore he remains as he is. But for the world, those six changes apply. It was created at some time. Then it kept changing. And changes happens and finally it gets destroyed and goes away. Right? So, but the only problem is, you see all these examples in the Bhagavatam also has got some problems. He says, when you give this example of the clay and the pot, does that mean that the clay has changed into pot? Will that happen to Satchidananda Brahman then? That is what this verse is clarifying, the 11th verse. Yeah? Maya is under Krishna's control, right? Brahman's control. So, Maya, he enters into Maya, Satchidanandam enters into Maya, and then the creation happens. That is spoken officially in that way, right? What it means is that Brahman is present in the Maya, and Maya has come from Brahman, and it is present because Krishna is present there, right? So, first time, Satchidanandam, Satyachitta Anandam became present in the Maya. Satchidanandam present in the Maya. And Maya is present in Satchidanandam. Present in the Satchidanandam. So, therefore, in Maya, Satchidanandam is present, right? And this Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, which is Maya, which is the Maya. When Maya became the three modes, Maya means, generally we use the word Maya. Maya means what? Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, right? So, in order to come in this way, Maya to come as three modes of nature, Satchidanandam's presence is required in Maya. All this is pure Vedantam it is. It is from Vedantam everything has come. And now that's been taken, others also, other acharyas have also taken all this to different degrees. They have accepted in their teachings, right? But original Vedanta philosophy, Advaita Vedantam, is fundamentally based on these things, right? So, due to presence of Satchidananda Brahman, Maya has become like these three modes, Sattvagunam, Rajogunam. So, when Maya turns like this in the three modes of nature, Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, the presence of Brahman, Satchidananda Brahman in Maya has helped Maya to transform itself into the three modes. And because Satchidananda Brahman helped Maya to become the three modes, Satchidanandam is present in the three modes as well. So, what we say is, generally when you remember, sometimes you will see in the Bhagavatam also it's there, that creation happens and I entered into it. It says, isn't it? What does that mean? I entered into it means Satchidananda Brahman has entered into Maya. That's what it is saying. That's why in the second canto you will see Krishna entered into the creation, right? So, this is a big topic in the Upanishads. This topic. Because it's a very fundamental thing, isn't it? The Brahman-Maya relationship. Yeah. So, In many Upanishads also it will say, so same words if you look, Yadova Imani Bhudani Jayande and all that, yeah? But those things are not discussed very much in the Bhagavad Gita. And our students also are not up to that mark to discuss that. So therefore, they just ignore it. Because then you can't relate with it, then that's all you can do, isn't it? So, how did he enter into it? If you look into Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada quoted that verse there, but there's not much spoken about it. Actually, that verse requires a lot of explanation because it's in the famous Upanishads. Yadhava imani bhutani jayande, it is there in so many Upanishads, right? So, but you have to see how people are not able to relate with many things. It's very hard for most of us because we haven't had that training from the beginning like that, yeah. So therefore we don't ask, we are much comfortable when we say God has come and created everything and he gone back. That kind of creation is easier for us to connect with because it makes more sense for our mind at the moment. Right? He created it and then he's gone back and resting somewhere. And this is the way they accept that, right? So, but this relationship with Maya, Sanatana Dharma is totally different from the other philosophies of the world. Sanatana Dharma, there's nothing exists here except Brahman. Brahman alone exists, right? So, in the beginning, Sachidananda Brahman exists. Maya comes. So if Maya comes in Sachidanandam, it means Sachidanandam is present in the Maya. And if Maya is transforming itself, it means that naturally Brahman is present in the Maya and Maya's transformations as well, right? So ultimate cause is Brahman. That is why it is said in that one verse which we all know. Sarvakarana Karanam. Ishvara Paramakrishna Sachidananda Vigraha. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. That Sachidananda Vigraham is. That Sachidananda Vigraham is Sarvakarana Karanam. Cause of all causes, right? So, so when we say that he has entered into the creation, what was the idea? Behind that is, this is discussed in the Taittiriya Upanishad. Taittiriya Upanishad will discuss a lot more in detail, right? And Acharya Swamiji talks about the five sheath around the soul. Yeah. And so these five sheaths, Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam, Anandamayam, which is around the soul, right? So, Sachidananda Paramatma is in and the sheets are around him. This Panchakosha Nirupanam, these five sheets, what is... You can see here the problem. In the verses what you read here, Upanishad verses, it is Jnana Margam. But lot of the topic is related to Yoga Margam. And then we consider Bhagavatam as Bhakti Margam. So you can't separate them, all these three things. Yoga Margam, Jnana Margam, Bhakti Margam. They are all interconnected each other. It's only for our convenience sake, we say, based on the sadhana process what you follow, we talk about these differences. Jnana Sadhana, Bhakti Sadhana, Yoga Sadhana, like that, right? But the truth what you realize through all the different sadhana processes is the same. That's not going to change. After all, truth is one. And that truth is spoken. And when you read about the truth, you can see there that yogam, jnanam, bhakti, they are all together coming through. Right? So, the idea behind that is that he has entered into these five sheath, right? Beyond the five sheaths exists that pure Sachidanandam, he points out that Sachidanandam is even beyond these five sheaths. You know the five sheets, which they are Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vidyanamayam, Anandamayam. It is beyond that the Sachidananda Brahma exists, right? So, first of all, Annamayam comes. Annamayam is a gross thing. That means we eat the food, and due to that, this existence, that kind of existence, right? And then Annamayam, you come into Pranamayam, and then to Manomayam, and then Vijnanamayam. Ultimately, he's saying here that gradually you are becoming more subtle. Pranamayam, pranam, the energy that is flowing in our body, pranam, that is subtle than the Annamayam. And more subtle than that is the Manomayam, the mental world. Then more subtle than that is the Vijnanamayam, more in a spiritual awareness, bodham. It is higher than the mental world, is it not? Mental world is mixed with matter, maya, everything. Vijnanamayam is more withdrawn and more subtle. So, then Anandamayam comes. So, these five kosham, or what we call as the sheath, right? Within all that, pure Sachidanandam remains, untouched by anything, right? So, why is it spoken like that? Ajari Swami says here that inquiry about the truth has to be inside and not outside. Has to be inside, not outside. But sadhana, if you look, our own sadhana, what we do in spiritual life, yeah? Most of the sadhana is external, is it not? Most of the sadhanas are external. That is because we are incapable of doing the internal sadhana. That's why external sadhana has become very prominent. But you can see why people, all over the world you will see this, external sadhana they give importance to. The reason for that is they are incapable of doing internal sadhana. That is the reason behind it. But you should not condemn them for that. You should not criticize them for that. In this creation, people are of different nature. And when you don't have the inward-looking nature and inward direction thinking, then the only thing you can do is the external ones. Because you are not capable of doing the internal ones, you are doing the external ones. Like, for example, deity worship, temple worship, and all the other fasting and all kinds of things, what we do, Harinam or the different types of worldly sadhanas which we do in the world, outside in the world, they are not as powerful as the internal sadhana is. Internal sadhana is the one which actually changes us, which brings us closer to the truth. Because Krishna is inside Antaryami. That's what he is saying there. So that capacity, many people won't have it in this world. You can't expect them to have it. Because they have lived in this world, they had a whole barrage of family life and children and job and home. And by the time you finish all that, you expect them to do internal sadhana, it will be very hard for them. So therefore, these external sadhanas are propagated. Even the external sadhanas, people are finding it difficult. What to talk about internal sadhana? And Krishna talks about it. In Ekadasya Skandam, he says these things very clearly. But Krishna has not condemned anybody. He says you need all that. Wherever, depending on which level we are at, you can only operate in that level. Is it not? Whatever level we are at, you can only do that level. So we shouldn't complain about it or criticize anybody for that. But we must also understand at the same time that the power of internal sadhana cannot be compared with the external sadhana. External sadhana gradually brings some discipline into life And over a period of time, in many life, because spiritual life is not for one life, isn't it? It's for several lifetimes. So, aneka janma samsiddhyam tebiyadi parangadim, Krishna is saying there. So, if we have become absorbed in external sadhana a lot in this time, in this world, it will bring chitta shuddhi to that person. Chitta shuddhi, which will gradually turn him internal, inward looking. So, he will start thinking then, what this is all about. Till then he will just do what he has been told to do all the time. Do a lot of service, he will go and do a lot of service, what he has told. And he will think, I have done everything, he feels happy about it. But then after some time he will start thinking, what's this all service about? How long this service going on doing? So when that thought comes, that's because you have done service for long. Otherwise you wouldn't have thought about it. That is how you come from external to internal, inward looking nature. That Andaranga Sadhana, what Krishna calls it as, comes there, right? So, so in order to make us convinced that the inquiry should be done inwards and not outwards, that is why it is spoken in this way that Krishna has entered into it. That's the reason. It's spoken like that, yeah? So, that means he is inside. Because he has entered into it, that means he is inside. To make us convinced that inquiry should be inside and not outside. Do you understand what I'm saying? That why is it spoken? You see, Krishna is present everywhere. But the reason why it is said like this, that Krishna entered into it, into these five sheets, what is spoken. Annamayam, pranamayam, anamayam, vijnanamayam, anandamayam. And then he's saying that he has entered inside this to say to us that he is inside and not outside. Don't look for him outside. You can keep looking for him whole many lifetimes, but you won't find him there. He's inside. That is for the reason for that, right? So that is where it is not that he is only there. He is everywhere. There is no place where he is not. But if you are inquiring for the truth, Krishna is the truth, isn't it? He's the truth. So if you're inquiring for the truth, the way, place where you will experience him is inside, not outside. Suppose you've done a lot of sadhana outside in the world. As I said, all the, I went for all the, what is all, Kirtan Melas, right? I went on all the Harinams. And I ate the prasadam as I was told, everything. And I did all sorts of things, what I was instructed by the authorities or whatever. I did all that, and still I find I haven't got anywhere. And you won't be anywhere, because the reason is this, that external sadhana has its own limitations. We must realize this. External sadhana is not the one which will change you. What will change you is internal sadhana. That internal sadhana, Krishna says, it's not possible for everyone. Only one who had a lot of spiritual culture from many lifetimes and one who has done a lot in previous life, in rare people you will find that capacity. But we will say, he's not doing anything. There are so many examples of that within our own movement. We have criticized people like that. They're not doing anything, like we are doing a lot for Krishna. And so this attitude comes then, right? So it's unfortunately spiritual life cannot be explained in 1 minute or in one class. It is a long process for which you have to go through all these things and understand, right? So before we talk about the world outside, we have to realize Krishna inside first, right? And only if you have succeeded in that, in realizing Krishna inside, only after that you will be able to realize him in the world outside. That's the way it works. You know that words, what we talk about all the time, sarva bhutya shuya pashet bhagavad bhavam atmana. Words looks very simple, isn't it? Sarvabhudeshu yappashyat bhagavad bhavam atmana. Everywhere I have to see Krishna in everybody. That's what the verse is saying. And Bhudani Bhagavatyasha Savai is the best of the, and we are all Bhagavadas, then pure devotees. We come to that, and because I'm looking, I'm seeing only Krishna everywhere. So there is Bhagavadottama, we have become. It's not that simple, is it? So why is it spoken in that way? Because that is a stage which comes after realizing the self. After we realize Krishna inside, only then you can realize Krishna outside. That's the way it works. You won't realize day one Krishna outside if you try very hard, it won't happen. Yeah. So that is why this is spoken, right? So in order for, only for that to tell us that it was spoken in this way, that Krishna entered into it. Because it looks very strange, isn't it? Krishna entered into something. Because there is only Krishna here, there is nothing else. So if only, it's only Krishna here, then who is entering whom then? That question will come. Nobody is entering anywhere. But it is spoken in this way, then after creation Krishna entered into it. We say like that, for this reason only, to make us aware that if we say like that, that he has entered into something, that means he is inside, not outside. To convince us, it is spoken in that way. It is there in the Upanishads, it's like that, right? So initially, beyond all these five sheets, he remains as a witness, as pure Sachidanandam. And we have to realize that Sachidanandam as our Atma. Sachidanandam inside is Antaryami. And we have to realize that as our soul, Antaryami as our soul. And then to realize that, the path is spoken. In this way, when we realize within ourselves as a witness of everything, Sarvasakshi, as the Antaryami inside, and Sachidananda Paramatma is present within everyone. In order to make us 100% sure that to all these concepts about Antaryami and everything is only to make us accept this principle, the inquiry should be within, not outside. If you tell ordinary person in the street that, you know, all your research and experiment is all waste of time, you should be inquiring inside, he won't understand that. Why is he saying like that? And we also have difficulty, is it not? You see, scientists have got problem. They are more intelligent than us. That's what they are saying. And they have got problems. That's why they are researching outside. But researching outside, this our normal method is, we will only look for things outside us. All senses are opened outwardly. Because we are under the influence of the sense perception, senses, we are under the grip of the senses, we have a tendency to go outwardly to look for the truth also. Everything else we inquire in the world outside, so naturally Krishna also will inquire about him in the world outside. So to change that way of thinking in us, that is why it is said that Krishna entered into it. So at least if by from that we have to think that if he has entered, he must be inside. To make our way inward, to change our way of thinking inward, all this is spoken. So inquiry has to be inside. It cannot be outside. And that is what we call antarmukhatvam. You remember that word? Antarmukhatvam. Bahirmukhatvam means looking outwardly in the world. Antarmukhatvam means looking inward. Right? With bahirmukham, or outward looking, you won't be able to realize him. But antarmukhatvam, it is possible. And all the rishis, generally, they are all antarmukham. All the rishis, all great personalities, Vishwamitra, Vasishta, Bhrigu, they are all the personalities in the Upanishads, isn't it? It is to them the Upanishads have come to this work. They are all antarmukham. That is their very nature. It's like, that's why they have become rishis. They became rishis because of this antarmukhatvam. And we are like this because of our bahirmukhatvam. It's a big thing in spiritual life. These are subtle things, but if you say all these things to people in the beginning, they will not be able to understand because there is so much bahirmukhatvam in them. But gradually over a period of time, when you give some thoughts to it, and when you start understanding things, you will start seeing the benefit of this, of the way the Vedam has spoken. Yeah? And the more antarmukhatvam is there, Upadesham in the Bhagavadam will be understood better. It's one of the qualifications for Upadeshams, antarmukhatvam. To understand Upadesham, antarmukhatvam is required. Many things what Krishna has spoken there. You remember when he started speaking to Uddhava about the Tundu Sarvam Paritejas Neham Sujana Bundushu, all those 7-8 verses there, it's all very much related to the antarmukhatvam of a person. So then once we establish Krishna's inside, and that is where we have to inquire about him, then we can talk about the subtle body, gross body, the world outside and other things. First of all, we have to recognize his presence inside. Inquiry has to be inside, not outside in the world. But in the beginning it's very difficult. So therefore we need temples, deities, and dancing and music and prasadam and all other things, examples in the world, to talk about so many other things. So much we talk about the world outside, is it not? So, but once you have accepted that antarmukhatvam and antaryami is present inside, that's where the inquiry should be. If you have come to that firm conclusions, then your inquiry becomes a lot more subtle then. Otherwise it won't be subtle. It'll be on a gross level. Isn't it? Like you can see that huge temples have been built, and they will all stand there for say 500 years, 1000 years. Somebody will invade them and destroy them all, and it will all be gone. And somebody else will come and build another 1000 temples. They will also last there as long as people have interest. And once that's gone, that's also over, gone. So all these things are not very helpful. At that particular time, they are beneficial for you to think. And we dig into the history of all the temples and all the holy places and all. But the world itself is a product of Maya, and within that you are doing all this research work. Anyway, So, Antaryami, Krishna is present inside. Yeah, I told you before that in Vedam, the inquiry is basically in Agni, Antaryami, and in the sun. Not in the temples. Yeah, I'm not criticizing temples, don't get me wrong. We need them. Don't say that we don't require them. But they are meant at a particular level in life, spiritual life. Every day if you start thinking that temple I'm going every day and therefore I'm doing service in the temple, my spiritual life is perfect, that's a misunderstanding. No. Spiritual life without proper understanding of what spiritual life is and the way it has been structured, it is all at different levels for different people. You remember in the Ekadasham when they spoke about that, he said this. What did he say? He said that three level of categories of devotees. Is it not? So, who is the one in the temple always? Archaya meva haraye. That verse, if you look. Then he needs that. He needs it. Yeah. He needs the temple. He needs the temple. And these Kanishta. Yeah. So, if I start deity worship and I think I am worshipping the deity is my eternal occupation and think like that, that means I am not spiritually very moved far. I am remaining in a level like that. Yeah, the third level, Sarvabhudeshya Pashyel, the Ishure Tadadaneshu, Baleshesha Dushar Sujam, that Madhima, And then the the third one. Yeah, the three. Why is it spoken like that? Navayogi Samvadam, I think, it comes.
Yeah.
Why is it spoken like that? To make us understand that till you move from this to higher levels, you will see things changing. Everything changes, right? Initially, we need the temples. Everybody... Now, when I say that, don't take it that it's only for a few days or few months or few years. No, maybe few lifetimes we need the temples before we move into the Madhyama level. So, Kanishta, Madhyama, Uttama, right? So, from Kanishta to move into Madhyamam, it takes time. And what to talk about from Madhyamam to come to Uttamam. Uttamam level means he is Paramahamsa. Sarvai Bhudeshu Yapashir Bhagavad Bhava. And he only sees Krishna within everybody. Nothing else. He doesn't see the name and form. He sees Krishna's presence inside. Yeah. So, those, if you remember that three categories, you can see from that, that we have to move on to the higher levels. We must know what is a higher level, isn't it? If you have to get to that, we have to know what it is. Otherwise, what will happen if you think that deity worship and temple worship is the only spiritual life which has come in the end of Traidayugam and Dwaparayugam? In Satyayugam, there were no temples. Nobody worshipped in the temples. Because by very nature itself, they were very inward-looking. So they didn't need temples. The temple's necessity came when we lost that capacity. As time advances, we get degraded in our spiritual life also, capacity, isn't it? By the time Kali comes, everything is gone. We are in a very... That's why, again, when you look in the 12th canto, how we get diminished in our spiritual qualities. Satyam, Shaujam, Daya, Tapas, four things which are related to our... required for dharma. Dharma's four qualities, right? One after the other, they are disappearing from this world. So as much as they disappear, we will lose our spiritual knowledge and spiritual realizations also. In Satyayugam, this problem didn't exist. Why? Because they have all these four things in full. When you have Satyam, Shaujam, Daya, Tapasya in full, there is no need for temples because everyone is a temple. They are seeing each other as Krishna's presence in within others. So therefore, dhyana, kriteja dhyayade Vishnu, dhyanam. Dhyanam means meditation. Meditation means inward looking. That's what dhyanam means, inward looking. That was the nature of the Satyayugam. When it came to Traidayugam, it changed. People started losing out of this four, diminished one after the other. Everything explained in the 12th canto, we'll see later. So gradually through Traidayugam came, and then by the time Dwaparayugam came, we couldn't live without temples. A stage came. In Satyayugam, we didn't need any temples. By the time Dwaparayugam came, temple worshippers become the most prominent process of spiritual life. Traidayugam was yajnam. Dwaparam was temple worship. So by the time temple Dwaparayugam came, we became very much in need of a temple. And Kalautad Harigirtanam. Even that has become difficult for us now. And therefore Harigirtanam has come as our best choice now. So you can see the thing we have to look at. So what we are saying here is that Krishna is present inside, as Sandaryami. That's where the inquiry should be there, right? And he is inside as Sachidananda Brahma. Similarly, our gross body, if you take it, it's also a transformation of the three modes of nature, right? And our body is not much different from all the other things in this world. This matter. Between us and this matter, there is not much difference if you look at it from the bodily level. Isn't it? The body is made of five material elements. This is also material elements. So practically we are made of the same substance. Right? So, But all these things exist. But within all that, they exist, we exist, and all the other things exist. Within all that, without changing, Sachidananda Brahmam exists. Without changing, remains like that. And so therefore, Gunaparinamam. Gunaparinamam means the changes due to the three modes of nature does not apply to him, right? So everything in this creation is Gunaparinamam. We also Gunaparinamam. Gunaparinamam means three modes of nature has created us. That means it's Gunaparinamam. Gunam has created, modes of nature has created us. And so is everything else. But within all these things, without changing, he remains as pure Sachidanandam, untouched by anything. Changes what's happening in the creation, right? And intelligent people, they know this. Through their power of discrimination, they get to know this, that he remains. How? He is present inside themselves as pure Sachidanandam. They realize that first. And then this is all realization. All realization only. First you realize him inside, present inside as Antaryami. And then you realize that he is present in the whole creation, in everyone, in everywhere. So that is, and it is that stage what is spoken in that first verse, Sarva Bhudeshu Yapashyet, Bhagavad Bhava, means this. Yeah? So, so initially realization is inside, that you have to realize the self first, and then you will realize after that everything else in this world is also the very same self what is inside us. Sachidananda, right? So, only at that stage, first of all we have to realize him inside. And then when you look at the world outside, the rishis are saying, you will be able to see Sachidanandam everywhere and you will be able to remove the Namarubam from there. Now we are seeing only Namarubam everywhere. This vision of Namarubam is not spiritual. It's completely materialistic vision. Namam Rubam. So, in this way it has to be realized. So, important thing is to realize the self, what we are, right? So, that Anubhuti, it is called Anubhuti. Anubhuti means, in experience level, you have to know who we are. In experience level. Right? And when we realize that, then you will know the world is also pure Sachidanandam. Right? So, so, at that moment, in all Namarubam, not only living entities outside, all these are step by step has to happen. And Krishna has to give it to us from inside when we realize this aspect, right? So, when we realize that, for example, first realization is my own truth. What is me? Who am I? That realization, yeah? That has to happen. And when that realization becomes perfect, that is when you see, look outside and you see everything else is also Sachidanandam. Of course, they are very higher level of realization, no doubt about it. Yeah? The thing is that the process of progression in this self-inquiry is stage by stage. It wouldn't happen overnight. Lot of sadhana required. Loads of sadhana required. And prior to that, as Krishna spoke, chitta shuddhi has to happen. In order to do good sadhana, you need chitta shuddhi. When our mind is very contaminated with all vasanas and all that, our sadhana will also be very dodgy. Isn't it? You know that. I mean, without me saying this, we know when our mind is very much polluted with all evil thoughts and impurities, what sadhana, what you're doing is also very impure. In the sense that it is not, it won't have much substantial effect on that. So therefore, Chitta Shuddhi is required. And that is why they say Karma Yogam is a stepping stone for Jnana Yogam or Bhakti Yogam. Karma Yogam is a stepping stone for that. Karma Yogam is the one which purifies a person. And when you get purified, then naturally your chittam is pure enough to understand these principles of spiritual life. Higher understanding will come at that time. So that is why Karma Yogam is spoken in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Bhagavatam. For this reason only. There is a progression, way of progressing in spiritual life. You can't change that. That is the system it is. The Vaidika tradition is like that. Through Karma Yogam you come to Bhakti or Jnanam. And then you will see Jnana Yogam will work for you or Bhakti Yogam will work for you. Whichever that is. Yeah. So having said all that, he says, so in this world, at a very later date, when realization comes to very higher level, at that time, you will see that even all the dead matter, like the namarupams in the form of buildings and rivers and mountains and plants and trees, which has got life at least, but dead matter also, you will be able to see that Sachidanandam is present in that. Now if somebody tells us Sachidananda is present, it's difficult to accept it. In our present state, isn't it? We think it is just dull matter lying like that. But strictly speaking, for a realized soul, that matter doesn't exist. Actually Sachidananda exists, but that is in a very higher state. So what Krishna is saying is, to Uddhava also, that initially don't look for Krishna in the dead matter. Initially, at least wherever there is life, doesn't matter, human beings, animals, birds, bees, plants, trees, where there is life present, look for him there. Even there, you may not be able to find it beginning. So what should you do? At least you see them in human beings first. That's what, in the Ekadasham, Krishna says that very clearly, Nareshu Abhishno Madbhavam, he says. Nara means human being. At least first you see me in all human beings. Naresha Vishna Madbhavam, Krishna says. Yeah? So, Naresha Vishna Madbhavam is the beginning of this realization. And then gradually it has to, when comes to that, comes to a higher level realization. Then it spreads into other species. And then after all that, it becomes whole creation itself. Is Sachidananda. So Sachidananda Brahmam realization, Krishna talks about it in that way, right? So, yeah. So through self-realization, ultimately one should be able to see Krishna, pure Sachidanandam, in everything what has come from the three modes of nature. The world has come from the three modes of nature. All living entities also with their names and forms, they have come from the three modes of nature. In all of them, you will be able to experience Sachidanandam in everything. That is what that verse is talking about. Right? Then next verse, again by an example it is being spoken. That's the next verse. Yadhagni medasya mridam jagosho bhuvyannam bodhyamaneja vrittim Yogair manushya madhiyandihi tvam gunesha buddhya kavayo vadandi yadha agni medasya mridam cha gosho bhuvyannam bodhyamane cha vrittim yogair manushya madhiyandihi tvam gunesha buddhya kavayo vadandi. He is saying an example here that when you rub the wood, from that, fire comes. Similarly, when you churn the butter, milk converted into yogurt, or and then churn it, and then butter comes out. Ghee comes from that, right? Similarly, from the earth, you do agriculture with the earth, and then food comes from that earth for us, right? Similarly, by digging the ground, we get water from there.
or we able to live in this world through trade and all that livelihood, right? Similarly, intelligent people, through their very intelligent, to able to see things in a most subtle level, sushma buddhi, through that they see, they extract Krishna from this whole thing, Sachidanandam, from everything. That's what it is saying there, right? So, say for example, in the wood there is fire. But when that mathanam happens, right, rubbing the when what is that?
There's a spider there.
It's also like us, another one, in another form, that's all. You don't have to be so worried. So, what is hiding? Fire in the arani. Arani means that two pieces of wood which you grind it, right? And finally you get fire from that. That means fire was hiding inside that wood. And the ghee is already present in the milk. But when you process the whole thing, finally we get the ghee from that, right? Just like we turn into curd and then churning and then butter and then it turns something to ghee. So that means ghee was present in the milk. That's why it came out like that, right? Similarly, we do agriculture and from that, from the land, we get the food. In the form of plant, it comes out and then we get the food, right? Similarly, we find the water in the ground. It's there. Water is there, right? And through effort, we find a way of livelihood, right? And for that, we earn money in this world. Similarly, through this bhakti sadhana, jnana sadhana, or yoga sadhana, in through these processes, it is possible to realize that Sachidananda Brahman, Krishna, who is present within us and who is present in the whole creation. Right? So, he is our Swarupam. Yeah? And, but he is present inside us as our own identity. Andaryami inside, that is our Sachidananda Atma. He is not different from him. But through this jnana process or yoga process or through the bhakti process, one of them, you can realize him. And when you experience that, Krishna's presence inside, you will know that he is present in all other living entities as well. Yeah, all living entities. And we see that at that moment we realize that Sachidananda Brahman is present not only within us, in all the living entities, and permanently. And at least at that time we realize, nothing will change in the world. World will remain as it is. See, the world we are perceiving now is through the senses. And that part will remain as it is. Nothing is changing there. But within us, we will not be any more relating to the world through the senses. That's what will change. Right? And we will realize that when you experience Sachidanandam present in the creation, we are also Sachidanandam, and that realization will come. That's the next verse. Tam tvam vayam nada samujjihanam saroja nabhadi chirepsidartham drishtu agadanar vridi madhya sarve gajadavarta vivagangamam bhaham tam tvam vayam nada samujjihanam sarojana bhajirepsidartham drishtva gadanar vridi madhya sarve gajada vartami vagangamam bham. Brahma is saying that in your navel the lotus flower is there, we have now seen you. And you have appeared suddenly in front of us. And just like in the forest, when there is a forest fire, the wild elephants there, they get very disturbed because fire is spreading so fast, right? So they get frightened. So what they do, they look for water, wherever there is water. They know that if we can find water somewhere, it's a safe place to be. So when they see water flowing somewhere, they all jump into it, because fire cannot enter into the water. So that's what he's saying here. Here is Gajada Vartamiva Gangam Amba. Just like if they see Ganga River, elephants feel safe, because it's cold, the water is cold, and it is safe to be inside. Similarly, when we have seen you now in this way, we are satisfied, we feel blissful, he says here. For a long period of time we wanted to see you, but it is difficult to see you so soon, and very rare it is. And it is only possible to see you through Ekanda Dhyanam, pure meditation, right? But we were able to see you now like this, and he has compared that with this elephant's experience with the fire. And when it is disturbed by the fire, and when it, similarly, we are also experiencing the fire, isn't it? What fire? Material existence, samsara dhava. That forest fire is compared to our life in this world. We are going through a very hard time. Is it not fear all the time? Material existence, in other words. Samsara dhava nalaloka, the same thing. So that forest fire is burning us. And now we have seen you and we have found water. Just like the elephants in the forest, when they were affected by the forest fire and they found Ganga River and found shelter in that and became free from the fear of the forest fire. Similarly, we, in our material existence also, because of material life, we are frightened about our life in this world. And due to that, now that you have come in front of us, we become free from that fear. That's how Lord Brahma concluding his prayers in that way, right? So that's important thing, right? So that's what he's saying here. Then if you say to us, what do you want? The answer for that is, Sattvam vidhal swakile loga bala vayam yadartha sava padamulam samagadase behir andharalpan kim vanya vijnapi mashesha sakshina. The 14th verse, right? So the purpose for which we have taken your shelter, you should do now what is necessary for us, right? Except you, who is present inside all of us as our very Atma, Andaryami inside, and who is a witness of everything, has anything to be told to do. You are asking, what do you want? But you know us more than we know about ourselves, because you are inside us as Andaryami, right? And you are the witness of everything what we are doing. So you know certain things about this Andaryami we have to be very, very focused on. Sarva Sakshitvam. Which means that he is a witness of everything what we do. And Sarva Niyamakatvam. He is also controlling us every moment. Right? He is controlling us every moment. Only thing, we are not conscious of it. That's another thing. We are thinking we are in control. And we are doing everything, saying to people, I'll do this for you, I'll do that for you and all that. But actually, Andaryami inside is making us to say things and we are saying that. And what exactly we are going to do, he knows before us. Because our vasanas, based on and the prarabdham, he knows. Accordingly, he is engaging us in different activities. And we are doing it and I keep saying, I've done this for you, I've done that for you, and all that kind of things. But actually, what we are doing is, according to our prarabdham, Andaryami inside is dictating to us, and we are acting on that instructions from Andaryami, right? So, Sakshitvam. And when we do some things, he is a witness of it. He is not involving in anything. is witnessing what we are doing. So sarva sakshito. Then he is the one who is prompting us to do things. So therefore sarva karanatvam. Everything is happening because of him. Right? And then when we do things, it's under his control everything. Whether we should get the results or not. He decides that. Sarva niyamagatvam. And sarva karma phaladadavai. What we are entitled for, he will give us the result on that basis. Not that how much I worked, I'll get the result. What he decides, based on my prarabdham, whatever I am entitled for, it will come to me in its own way. Right? So all these things are there, and because Brahma is saying that, I am very aware of all this, and you are the witness of everything, what is going on inside me, so why do I have to say anything to you? Because you know more than me about me. And then he says that in that 14th verse, yeah? So you do whatever is necessary. That's all Brahma said to him. You do what is necessary, right? And what do I have to do so that I can come back to you? I don't have to stay like this in this fearful material existence, right? And you know that what is required. And therefore there is no need for us to tell you what we need. It's not required, he says. Because inside me, outside me. You are present inside as our very soul, inside. And in outside, in everything, you are present in everything. And so, who else is a better witness than you? Who once who knows everything, right? So, nothing that you do not know. You know everything, right? And therefore, whatever I am doing is under your instructions. So therefore, there is no need, he's saying here. For what purpose I have taken your shelter, I don't have to say to you. Brahma's statement. For what purpose I have taken your shelter, I don't have to say to you, because I don't know what I want. You know what is good for me, right? And if you say that you think about it yourself and ask for what is required, if that is what you have in your mind, that's the next verse. You see, Lord Brahma is opening up his heart and saying to Krishna that there is nothing I have to ask you. There's nothing I have to say to you. All I can do is that you are in everything, everywhere. And you are making the decision. It's another way of surrendering to Krishna. That's what he's saying. Aham giritrascha suradayoye dakshadayogne erivakedavaste kimva vidamesha prudhak vibhada vidhal swaksham no dvija deva mantram. Me, Lord Shiva, Sri Rudra, Indra and all the other devadas, and all these prajapatis like Daksha and all of them, we are all sparks from the huge fire. Right? So, because we are sparks, we have our own limitations. We won't know the whole thing. He's saying here, Ada dvijadeva mandram sham na vithalswa. Therefore, you tell us what do we have to do. We don't know anything. We don't know anything. What is good for us? We don't know what we have to do either. So you give us some guidance and help in all the possible way, he's saying here. So this is that verse. He's saying here, me, Lord Shiva, all Devadas, Daksha Prajapati, all of them are sparks which has come from a huge fire. But spark is always separated from the huge fire. Right? But we are also part of the fire. We are not saying that we are not part of the fire, but we are separated from you. For example, a huge fire, what it can do, a spark cannot do. Right? Therefore, we don't know what will give us some peaceful state. Right? And similarly, all the devadas who are present, the demigods is referring to, for us, Brahma is on behalf of them all speaking, all the devadas. and the rishis and the devotees, whatever they have to do so that they will become shanti, samadhanam, peace inside, please instruct us, what do we have to do, right? And tell us what we have to do, he said. And what we have to do, that alone you have to tell us. You don't have to say anything else, right? Order it to us. You order us and we will do that. What is auspicious for all of us? That is how Brahma concluded that prayers. In this way, Shiva Brahmashi is saying there that when Krishna was glorified in these verses before, with that Brahma study finishes. Verses begin from 8 to 15. 8 verses, right? 7 to 15. 8 to 15. So 8 verses. This Brahma study finishes here. At that moment, Sri Shukha Brahmashri is saying here, evam virinjadibiri didasta vijnaya desham hrudayam tadeva jagada jimuda gabhiraya gira bhadhanjalim samvrda sarvakaragan. When he was glorified by Brahma in this way, Krishna heard all that, understood that, and they were standing there with folded hands, Brahma, Shiva, everybody there, and to them he spoke. I will continue after a few minutes.
खेदोदर्पणमर्जनं वो महाधावाग्नि श्रेयकैलवचन्द्रियाविदरणं विद्यावधू जीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदपूर्णामलास्वादनं सर्वात्मास्वमनं वरं विजयदे श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम् नाम्नामगारि बहुधा निजसर्वशक्ति तत्रापिदा निमिदा स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तमकृपा भगवन्ममापि सुंदरी कविदा जगदीश कामयी मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरी भक्तिरहरी दुहित्वयी नंदकिंगरां पतितामां शमी भवाम्बुदो कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितदौली सदृशं विचिन्तय नयनं गलदशोधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निदं गदावभूतव नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायुधं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायुधं शून्यायुधं जगत्सर्वं गोविन्दग्रहेण मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां भिनष्टु माम् अदर्शनां महदां करोतु वा यथा तदा विदधातुलम्बडो मल्प्राणनाथासु न एव नापरा सर्वत्र गोविन्द नाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द.
Brahma glorified Krishna. And after this Brahma study, Krishna spoke, Meka Gambhira Yagira, says there is simple. Ji Muda Gambhira Yagira. In a very thundering voice, he spoke. You will see this all the time about Krishna saying like that. In other words, what he is saying, that his voice itself was very powerful. And he spoke like this. You, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and all the devatas present here, my... my words, listen to this very carefully. Krishna says, what will benefit you, I will tell you what is beneficial for you. You have to remember why they came to Lord to Krishna, because of the fight between the demigods and the demons, and demigods lost everything. Here he is saying here that Durvasa gave the garland. You remember the story, don't you? Durvasa gave the garland. And And then garland to Airavatam. Airavatam kept it on the tusk. It fell. And Airavatam put its feet and ground it. Durvasav didn't like it. Indra did not honor the garland properly. That's where the problem started, right? So Durvasav cursed them. That Jara and Nara, you will all feel old, and old age has come, will come to you, and you will all experience the... So basically heavenly planets have become an old age home. That's what has happened because of this curse. Remember an old age home where you go, everybody is coughing and what it's like in an old age home. Everybody is sitting on a wheelchair or in a chair comfortably and looking at each other when it's my time to go, waiting for that, you know, the departure lounge is the old age home. So we all end up in that situation. So heavenly planets, which is supposed to be a place of enjoyment and happiness, has become like an old age home. So that's what he's saying here, that the solution for that is, he's saying to them, that you go and churn that milk ocean. Now these people can't even walk, and he's telling them to go and churn the milk ocean. And he says the churning rod is the Mandhara mountains, you can use that, he says. And Vasuki is the rope for that. And you churn the milk ocean, and from that you will get the nectar. You take that nectar, and if you consume that nectar, you will get your youth back. So when Krishna said all this, they started looking at each other. They can't even walk. And you tell somebody who can't even walk what to talk about doing anything. They are just standing there. Already Durvasav cursed and gone. And the old age just hit them straight away. They all became very sick. And some of them are coughing. And some of them are looking for paracetamol or whatever. The whole scene, you can imagine what it's like. Old age has hit them so badly. Right? So, nectar has got this capacity. Nectar will give you youth back. Right? And so Jara and Nara will leave you with that. You have been, otherwise you may have to live like this for a long time. It's a very long period of time. And time is favorable for them, for the asuras, right? Time is favorable for them. And that is why they have become powerful now. And they have become all opulent everywhere, right? And this is a time they are in a better situation than you. And you are becoming weak and they are getting stronger, right? Because time is favorable for them, right? And in this situation, the best thing for you now is you are so weak and they are very strong. And without their help, you won't be able to do it also. So therefore, in order to churn the milk ocean, you go and make a, what do you call, truce, is it? You make a truce, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, with them. You make peace with them and do what is necessary. Make peace with them. That's what you're supposed to do when you are, when somebody is, your enemy is very strong and you are very weak, the right thing to do is to make peace with them. Not like the way they're doing these days. It's no point in fighting with someone, somebody is very strong. When you know your position is very weak and somebody is very strong, the intelligent thing is to keep a relationship in such a way that you don't get affected by that. You can somehow survive then, isn't it? So that's what he said to Krishna, also said the same thing to them. So go to the asuras, and they are in a very powerful position. But ask for help and churn the milk ocean, right? You remember, they are both from the same father, Kashyapa Prajapati. From Aditi Devi came Devadas. Aditi Devi came the demons, asuras, right? So, after all, he says, you see your family relationship now. Tell, that's what you do in this situation. We are all brothers and sisters and all, you know, family attachment, you wipe it, bring it up and tell them that. And they will help you if you go and approach them correctly, right? And convince them of the importance of this nectar. They may not know it, so you have to explain to them. And they will become favorable to you. And if they cooperate with you, then start churning the milk ocean, right? Sometimes you may have to make peace with enemies also, right? when the enemies are strong and we are very weak, it is not very good intelligence to start fighting with them at that stage, yeah? At that stage, it's no point in fighting with them, right? So, best thing is to go to them and try to negotiate with them in such a way and work together with them, cooperate with them, right? And that is intelligence and proper way to handle that situation, right? And he gives the example that, you know, the snakes sometimes get caught up in the net when they want to catch the snake, and the snake doesn't know how to get out of the net once it is inside. So what does it do? Its enemy, the mice, comes. And mice can cut the net. It can cut anything with its teeth. A snake doesn't have that. So it will make friendship with the mice. And mice will cut the net and break it. And the snake will escape it. And then snake will eat the mice. He says, that's what Ahimoshika Nyaya it's called. Ahi is the snake, Moshika is the rat. The snake and rat, that relationship, right? So, in the same way, how the snake gets out of... Similarly, this is a situation like that, right? So, churn the milk ocean and get the nectar, and you have to do the churning with their help. So the demigods were saying, you know, then we'll have to give the nectar to them. You see, they cooperated with us. We'll have to give the nectar to them, right? And then if they take the nectar, then they also will become powerful. This is the way their mind is working. Who? Devadas mind. And if they become powerful, then they will give us more trouble later, right? And suppose they steal the whole nectar. We didn't get anything and they got all the nectar. Then what will happen? Our condition will be worse, isn't it? So, they were thinking this and feeling very depressed about that. So, and he says there that Malsarabuddhi means this competing spirit, each other. Krishna says that they have this malsare buddhi in them too much. Who? In the devata, sorry, in the asuras. Asuras have got malsare buddhi. And in this malsare means competing each other, right? I'm better than you. I have to always establish that all the time. That's malsare buddhi, right? So this malsare buddhi is very high in them. So therefore, among themselves also, between them, Malsara Buddhi is very high. You know what I'm saying, Malsara Buddhi. Malsara, I want to compete. I'm better than you, this establishing that. Among the demons, it's much higher. Demigods don't have so much, right? So Krishna is saying that to them, to Brahma, that because this Malsara Buddhi is very high in them, they will quarrel each other. And they will not get the nectar at the end. They won't get it because of that, he says, right? And so, gave these instructions, all in summary, he gave it to them, and Krishna disappeared after that, right? And Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva also went back to their own abodes, right? And then Indra goes, this is the story part of it. Indra goes to Mahabali. Mahabali is the head of Asuras, right? So, when Mahabali saw Indra coming to see him. So all other Mahabali's associates, the other leaders of the Asuras, naturally they are Asuras, aren't they? So Asuri Buddhi is, when somebody comes, why is he coming to us? They're feeling happy about it, or he's coming to us, asking for help. And among the demigods or devadas, the most hated one is Indra. Indra, right? Among the asuras, right? So, why? Because Indra is a cheater. He can cheat. He has done it many times before, right? So, and they know that he is like that. He is coming with a smile and trying to be nice to us, they are sensing some danger from there, right? So, which way is he going to cheat us now? That's what they were thinking about it, right? And so thinking like that, all the advisors, the associates of Mahabali, told Mahabali in a very grave voice, don't trust him. There is something behind it. And so be careful what you're going to tell him, right? And they all showed a little bit of unhappiness while seeing Indra, right? But Mahabali, you know, is very benevolent, very, very magnanimous in his dealings with people, right? And he is very, he's a gentleman, Mahabali. Even though he is Asura, he is ahead of all that. Mahabali has that nature in him. After all, Prahlada's grandson, isn't it? So, he says to them, although they are our enemies, when they have come to us in a friendly nature, we should consider them like our friends. Mahabali is telling them. The names are mentioned there, Namuchi and a few names like that. Yeah, who are these friends talking to Mahabali, giving them the address, giving them the background? Yeah, the different devatas, right? So Mahabali, what he did was, he told them that when they come in a friendly relationship they want to have with us, you should also welcome them. And when to fight and when to think of them as enemies, that is in the Rajanidhi. That means the kings have to know all these things, isn't it? The political side of it. How to... there is Shastram behind all this, Rajanidhi, how the king should behave themselves, each other. And Mahabali knows all these things. Now Indra has come in a friendly mood to us to talk about it, right? And therefore, he is our guest. He is our guest. So, accordingly we should behave, Mahabali said to the other demons, right? So he chastised them and then they became peaceful because he is the head, isn't it? So when Indra came in, walked in, Mahabali offered a seat and asked Indra, what can I do for you? He says, Indra says, you know what situation we are now. We have lost the battle with you. You have taken control and now we are cursed by Durvasao and we have become very weak. But we want to get out of this situation and you have to help us for that. And we know that the only option we have is to churn the milk ocean and using this Manthara mountains and as the churning rod, and Vasugi as the rope to use the churning rod, right? And from that, the nectar will come. And if we take that nectar, we will get our youth back in the natural way. So if you cooperate with us, we can do that. And So when he spoke about all these things to the asuras, they heard about this nectar, that nectar can give youth back and make you youthful, right? So, and he spoke everything, Indra spoke with a nice way, not thinking of them as enemies, but the beauty of the nectar, and it's worthwhile endeavoring for that. And Mahabali, when he heard all these things, Asuric nature, you see what this story is saying to us, the nature of divine nature and the demoniac nature. The demoniac nature is always, if they hear something is nice, they want to grab it straight away. You know, the greed is very high in them, in the demonic nature, right? And that is because of the rajogunam present in them. Asuric, the sattvagunam will not make you to do things like that. Sattvagunam will make you to think first. Naturally, sattvagunam means that you are satisfied with what you got, isn't it? Whereas rajogunam means you are never satisfied. You remember Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna says this about the nature of sattvagunam and rajogunam. The nature of a person, you can figure it out, whether he is in sattvagunam or rajogunam. Sattvic nature is, he is satisfied with what he got, everything. That's why brahmanas are normally in sattvagunam, because of this nature in them. Whereas the others, kshatriyas, never satisfied, wants everything. If this country is not enough, they'll go to the next country to invade. Where is that coming from? Rajogunam. So that's the difference between sattvagunam and rajogunam. And that's the special nature of rajogunam. Never satisfied, wants to grab everything, right? If they see something and if it is nice, they want it straight away. This is rajogunam, right? So rajogunam is asuric nature. So when they heard about this, Indra put it to them in such a way that nectar is worthwhile endeavoring to get it. And if we get that nectar, we'll all become young and we will have a great time afterwards. So that attraction for nectar, Indra managed to create in the minds of the asuras, right? So they said, yes, we will cooperate with you. So by now they have forgotten about the enmity. By normally, they are arch enemies, these two, asuras and the devas, right? But when they found that this nectar, amalam, will help to restore the youth, they thought about it, that, so it doesn't matter if they get some nectar, but we are also going to have it, and it will help us. They got immediately attracted to that, right? So, so then they started the process. They became very, and also the rajogunam, another thing is, they are very conscious of their strength, that they can do everything in that way. Due to that, that ego inside, they decided to get the Mandara mountains as the churning rod. And in that effort, when they were bringing it, asuras and devas, they were trying to carry the Mandara mountains. And in that process, some of them died, because it was a heavy one and they could not handle it, carry it, right? At that time, Krishna appeared there and helped them and to lift the Mandara mountain, because Mandara mountain was too heavy for them to manage it themselves, right? One another point trying to make here is, if you try to do anything in this world with ego, I'll do this, I can do it, it's quite possible that that ahankaram first will get hit. It won't work, right? Even if you are trying to do a good thing and thinking that I'm going to do it and I'm responsible for that, with ahankaram, if you do that, troubles can happen from that. So this Mandara mountains created this problem for them. That is why a few of the demigods and the demons died in that process. And the reason for their death is that they together they thought they can do it. Ahankaram inside, ego inside, right? So they ultimately, Krishna, what did he do? He lifted the Mandara mountain and put it on top of Garuda and flew, right? And Garuda brought the Mandara mountain and brought it and put it in the place of where they wanted, in the milk ocean. And that milk ocean was going to be churned now. Here Vasugi has to come as the rope. And if Vasugi has to come, Garuda has to go. Garuda cannot stay if Vasugi is there, because they are arch enemies each other. If Garuda is there, Vasugi won't come. So in order for Vasugi to come, Garuda has to go. So, because they are enemies each other, right? Vasugi is frightened of Garuda. And you know that story, Mahabharata, it's there, Kadru and Vinata, how they became inimically each other in the beginning of Mahabharata story, right? So, and snakes, they will never win over Garuda. Garuda is too powerful, right? They are always frightened of Garuda. So Krishna told Garuda to leave the place. When Garuda went away, Vasugi comes then. And the churning of the milk ocean begins with that. Yeah? Churning of the milk ocean begins. So let's look at that. What happened was, that is in the next chapter. All the other story you can read in the book. It's just there. We are more concerned about the Stuti and the Upadeshams. Srilajari Swamiji's approach is also is like that. He is not into Katha side of it. It's there, Katha, any verse is as it is, if you understand that. Yeah. So I mentioned the story. So 7th chapter is the beginning of the churning of the milk ocean, right? Sri Shuka Uvacha. When the churning started, there immediately the Kalagodam, the poison came. Poison came out. And people, they all got frightened. Kalagodam appeared inside. And they glorified Lord Shiva at that time. And he took that poison within himself and he protected this world. And that is this chapter, 7th chapter. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Te Nagarajamamandriya Phalabhagena Vasukim Pariviya Girao Tasmin Netram Abdhim Mudanvida. They told Vasuki that we will give you some nectar when we get it. And so Vasuki was also got encouraged for that. And they put Vasuki around Mandara mountains and they charted the churning, right? Are bhire susamyatta amrutartham kuru udvaha hari purasta jagrahe purvam devastado abhavan. So they started the churning. So first, Krishna himself caught hold of, when I'm saying Krishna Hari in this appearance, right? First of all, went and caught hold of Vasugi's face, mouth side. Vasugi's mouth side, right? So all the demigods also went with Krishna and caught hold of the face. And then they told the demons, asuras, you can hold the tail now. So they caught hold of the head and they told them to catch hold of the tail, right? Tannai chandaitya padayo maha purusha cheshtidam na grishnimo vayam puchaya Pucham aherangam amangalam. So you can see that mentality of the asuras, right? Deliberately Krishna did this. Because asuras are very proud of their heritage, their ancestry. They said that, why do we have to catch hold of the tail and you are getting hold of the head? Why can't we hold the head and you get the tail? because we are equal to you, we are in no way less than you. That feeling of pride in them. So when Vasuki was there, and demigods got and caught all of that, the asuras did not approve it, right? They said, we are not ready to hold on to the tail. We need, because the tail of the snake is not an important part. It's a very inauspicious one. We don't want to touch it. We only hold the head, he said. So that's what he's saying here. And the reason for that, you see how they spoke. All this is to teach us asuric nature and the devika nature, divine and demonic nature. So look at their logic, why they can't hold the head. That's the next verse. Swadhyaya shudha sambandham prakhyada janma karma bhi iti tushnim siddhan daityan vilokya purushottama smayamano visrajyagyam pucham jagraha samara kradasthana vibhagastam evam kashiva nandana. He's saying here that what that verses are indicating is that they had no faith in Krishna's words, anything, right? And due to their lack of faith in Krishna, because asura's nature is like that, isn't it? They will not accept any authority. That is the nature of asuric swabhavam, it is not accepting any authority. That's why this demoniac nature's problem is that, not to accept any authority. They think they know everything. So here what happened was, he's saying here, due to their lack of faith in the authority of Krishna, even though eventually they got the nectar, they couldn't have it. They couldn't get it, right? That is the reason they couldn't have it. Because of this problem, that Krishna said something to do it and they couldn't accept it. Their mentality, asuric nature, right? They doubted, why is Krishna telling us to get hold of the tail? If Krishna says something, you follow it, isn't it? You don't keep asking, doubting Krishna and questioning him. And then you will never be able to get anywhere. That's not the way. But Krishna allowed the demigods, so devadas, to hold on to the head. And by saying that, Krishna thought that if we allow them to hold on to the head, it could cause some danger for them. So in order to avoid any problem for the asuras, right, Krishna, out of compassion, told them, you caught hold of the tail. Krishna decided that you get hold of the tail, we will hold on, the devas will hold on to the head. To the head, right? But they couldn't think in that way. If you are a devotee, you will think, that's a devotee's nature. Whatever Krishna says, I accept that without any questioning that again. If you are questioning, that means you have no faith in Krishna's words, isn't it? So when Krishna caught hold of the head, devadas also caught hold of the head, right? When Krishna caught hold of the head, the devadas thought that's what he wants them to do it, to hold the head, right? And devas thought like that and they did that. Right? And when devadas caught hold of the head, Krishna didn't say anything. Krishna told asuras, you hold the tail. And then Krishna held the head. And these old people, our devas, they're standing there. So they have to get involved. So they went and they thought, because Krishna is on that side, we'll hold there. They didn't want to go and hold the tail because Krishna is holding. They were helpless. They didn't have the strength. Mainly it is done between Krishna and the asuras. They are the ones who are churning. So Krishna held that head and told the asuras to hold the tail. And the asuras didn't like it. they immediately thought, why we are also equally, we have the same tradition like the devas or what? Our father is the same, so lineage is the same from father's side, and mother is Aditi and Didi, their sisters. So why do you keep us lower always? Why do you treat like us? And that's how they thought about it. And they became very proud about it, and they behave like this, right? So, whereas Devadas didn't think like that. Devadas, they couldn't do anything, first of all. They were very weak. So, so they held the head and they started the churning. But because they believed in Krishna's words, and even though temporarily they lost the, you will see when you read that, you will see that they lost the nectar, because Dhanendri brought the nectar and they snatched it and they ran away. Even though they lost it, but they got it back at the end, right? And they were able to get back their youth after drinking the nectar, right? This story is to teach us, to tell us, this is the message in the story, right? So, which way should we work in this world so that your work becomes success? Your effort becomes success. This secret is the one that is taught through this Palari story. This pastime is to teach this principle to us, that I mentioned this to you before, in the two verses at the end it comes, right? The story is spoken for that purpose, to teach this principle, that if you want endeavor for something, if you take Krishna shelter, and with the devotion and bhakti, if you endeavor anything, that looking for Krishna's help, and with that consciousness, if you execute a karma, then even though you have lost the result, it will come back to you. This principle, right? So, sometimes we work hard in this world, and the result may not come. But doesn't mean that you have lost the result. Result will come back in some other form at some other time. Main thing is faith in Krishna, not the work. That's the important thing. That means karma, any karma, what you do, if it is done with faith in Krishna, that karma will be successful. And any karma which is done without any faith in Krishna, that karma will be a failure at the end. In order to get this principle to our mind, this churning of the milk ocean is spoken. Remember this?
Yeah.
I mentioned before. Yeah. Evam sura asura ganai, that verse, right? Both of them worked very hard. Both of them put equal endeavor, effort. And so kalam was same, desham was same, effort was same. In spite of that, the results came. Demigods could not get the benefit from the result. Even though they got the amrita, nectar came to their hands, but it was taken out from them. It's a very big principle it is in karma, while doing karma. That karma is done with this awareness that Krishna is doing that. I'm doing it because Krishna has put me into this situation. Whether the result should come or not, that is in Krishna's hands. With this awareness, if you execute the karma, that karma, even if you not get the result straight away, but the result will come at some point in time. On the other hand, even if you may have got the result now, you may not be able to enjoy it. That karma result, karma bhalam, you may not be able to enjoy it, right? And that's what has happened to the asuras, right, at the end. So, and you will, so, if you don't take shelter of Krishna and without any faith in Krishna, purely out of your ahangaram, ego, I don't need any Krishna self, I can manage it myself. And if we act in that way, and start thinking that with my effort I can do anything, and I become very overproud due to that. And if you try to do something in that attitude, even if you get the result, you may not be able to use it. You may not be able to enjoy it. You may not be able to enjoy it, right? You can see that in this world, if you carefully scrutinize the world, sometimes people work hard, earn, make a lot of money, and people think that, and they think that they have out of their, they're very smart, and that's why they have made so much money. All these things, illusion in their head, right? And by the time money comes, they are dead and gone, or they got so sick, they can't enjoy it. So everything, karmam is like that. Karmam is not a very simple phenomenon, work and get the result. That's not karmam is. It involves this, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. It involves this me and mine, everything in that, right? So, say you gave me a glass of sweet rice, and I'm going to drink that sweet rice, nice hot sweet rice, very tasty, well cooked, everything. The moment I was going to drink that, it dropped my hand, and the glass fell on the ground, the whole sweet rice is gone. So I couldn't enjoy it. That's what it is talking about, right? Similarly, I got the result, everything in my hand. I just have to enjoy it, but due to my ahangaram inside, the result has lost it. I've lost it, right? Means that I'm not entitled for the result. So karma bhalam, unless it is sanctioned by Krishna, you can't have it. And Krishna sanctions it if you execute the karma with this aware consciousness. Yeah. So the reason for that is the difference in the bhavam inside. Right? So, asuras didn't have any faith in Krishna. They had no faith in Krishna. They had faith in themselves, in their ability. And they didn't have any bhakti. Faith means bhakti, isn't it? Bhakti. But anyway, Krishna told the devas, right? Don't worry about it, what asuras are saying, that we won't hold the tail. Let them hold the head. If they want to hold the head, we'll hold the tail. It doesn't matter. And what important thing is, we have to get the nectar first from by churning, right? And we cannot do it without the help of them. And when you go to, you have gone to them asking for help, that means then you'll have to listen to them also. You can't be obstinate. You got to agree with some of the things what they are saying, right? In other words, you are pawning your own independence, right? And we have to listen to them now, what they are saying, right? So the conditions they have put forward, we will have to accept it, right? So for churning of the milk ocean, we will have to agree with them that they want to hold the head, all right? Only if you, so Krishna is saying all this to the devas, right? If this is what they want, we will have to agree with that, and let's see what happens. So when Krishna said like this, the devas naturally accepted that. They didn't say anything. They didn't say one word against that. And so they went and caught hold of the tail. And asuras caught hold of the head. And they started the churning. So when they started churning, they've forgotten something. What was that? Any auspicious thing, you are supposed to offer respects to Vigneshwara, Ganesh, Ganapati, Ganesh, right? So, and Vigneshwara, that's why it's given that name, isn't it? You can see in the 8th verse. Vilokya Vignesha Vidhim Tadeshwara Duranda Viryo Avidhadabhi Sandhi Krithuavabhu Kachama Malbudam Mahat Pravishyato Ayam Giri Mujjahara. at that time that then Vigneshwara creating different obstacles. Vigna means obstacles. You know, everywhere normally the Vaidika system is like that. First of all, you offer a worship of Ganesh for everything, isn't it? Any yagam, homam, yajnam, even daily temple worship. Generally, there will be Ganapati homam first. Ganesh is pacified first. And so that today's deity worship goes uninterruptedly, without any blocks, any problems. So therefore, normally this is a system, but it is done even now in big temples, they do it, that before they start the deity worship of the deity, the Ganapati homam is performed. Ganesh is pacified. Ganesh is offered respects, because he is the one who can avoid any delays or any other obstacles in the process, right? So here what happened was that they got this Mandara mountain, they brought it, went down. Another block has happened like this. So they started like this. So that's what he's saying here. Viloke Vignesha Vidhim Tadeshwaro. Vignesha is Ganesh, right? Seeing that it is going down, the Mandara mountain went down, Krishna took the incarnation of tortoise incarnation and came from bottom and lifted the Mandara mountain. So in this eighth canto, you can see the fish incarnation, tortoise incarnation, Vamanamurti's incarnation, all incarnations, lot of incarnations comes in this. Yeah. So, when Mandara mountains was lifted, Krishna realized that Vigneshwara is responsible for this obstacle. Actually, Ganesh is not different from Krishna. If you have the Voice of God book, it explains very clearly who Ganesh is, how Ganesh was born, and all that story is there in that. Right? So Krishna understood it is Vigneshwara behind it. And from bottom he lifted that on his back in the tortoise form. And if it lifted in enough so that it stays on the top, it doesn't come down. So this Mandara mountain, a lot of it is underneath the water. And only that part of it which is necessary to stay above the water for the churning process, it has to stay like that. So Mandara mountain was held in the water from bottom by the tortoise to an extent that much level required above the water, so that they can tie the vasugi around and started the churning, right? So this form, Krishna's form, tortoise form, is for lifting that Mandara mountains. And when the mountain went underneath the water first, and now it has come up again, because of the tortoise from the bottom it has lifted, right? And then they started the churning again. You look that in the 10th verse. Surasurendra Bhujavirya Vepitam Paribhramandam Giri Manga Prashtada Bibratada Vartana Madhi Kachapo Mene Angandu Yana Maprameya. So Devas and Asuras, both of them were happy that it has come up. And then when the Vasugi they started churning. So when they started churning, the bottom Mandara mountain is on the back of tortoise, right? And tortoise felt happy. Why? It is feeling, because of that rubbing, what it was doing, itching, that feeling. That sometimes when you are very itchy and then you scratch, you feel happy, isn't it? The same thing. If the tortoise felt happy. And he says, so that's what he's saying here. That's the way Krishna wanted to have a scratch, somebody to scratch him. And so therefore he did that, right? So Krishna remained there supporting this, because when they were churning, Krishna experienced that scratch. And just like when we get scratch at the back, you rub the, you must have seen cows and horses and all that, they'll go some wall or somewhere and they will rub their back, isn't it? We also do that if sometimes when we cannot tolerate the scratch, right? So so Krishna is thinking this Mandara mountain is very good because he is getting that comfort, the happiness from that scratch, right? And when they were scratching like this, that kurma tortoise fall asleep because it was feeling so comfortable with the sleep, right? That's what he's saying here. Tathasura navishadasurena rubena tesham balavirya mirayan uddibayan devaganamsha vishnu devena nathendram abhoda rupa. So Krishna is supporting from the bottom as the tortoise, right? And he is also helping the devas. And he is helping the Vasugi to sleep so that she can do the job when they were using her as using Vasugi as a rope. In all of them, Krishna gave the energy for them to do everything. So the devas to help hold the head, the asuras to hold the tail, Vasugi to feel comfortable with the churning, and Mandara mountains he supported from the bottom. So basically this whole churning of milk ocean, Krishna is doing it. Nobody else is doing it. He is behind it, giving the energy to everybody what they need to do. Right? That is what he is saying there. So so asuras also got strength to do it. And similarly, because they were holding on now the head, he gave them a lot more strength to churn the milk ocean, right? And so similarly for the devadas also, he increased their strength. And he got into different ways Krishna's energy flew into them, went into them. For the asuras, he gave them the impetus or strength, increased their strength, belam. Physical strength given them. More physical strength and mental strength as well to them. And to the devas who were feeling weak till then, temporarily he gave them the strength to do the churning. Then in Vasugi, Krishna increased the tamogunam in them so that he could sleep through tamogunam. Right. Similarly, when it was churning, right, you may feel pain, is it not? So, in order that Vasugi don't feel the pain, Krishna increased that tamogunam in the Vasugi so that it could fall asleep while churning, right? So Krishna entered as tamogunam in Vasugi. In this way, all of them got different support from Krishna, and both devas, asuras using this Mandara mountain, they continued the churning, right? And Mandara mountain, while churning, it was having a little bit of vibrations, right? And then it becomes difficult to do the churning properly when it is not stable in that way. So, what he's saying, you can next verse, right? 12th verse. Upajya Gendram Giridhari Vanye Akramya Hastena Sahasra Bahu Tastav Divi Brahma Bhavendra Mukhe Abhishtu Vaddi Sumanobhi Vrishta. When Krishna was doing all these things, Lord Brahma, Shiva, all of them were flowers of, you know, showered on them, right? And when they continued churning, right, then when you churn the yogurt for butter also, the churning rod has to be under your control. If the churning rod does not act properly, in other words, if the churning rod is not held properly, and churning rod does things differently, the way the churning, only then from the yogurt, the butter will start coming up from that. You know what I'm saying. When you churn the yogurt, what happens is that if the churning is proper in a synchronized way, the way they churn, with the hand if you churn, or with the rope if you churn, either way, the butter will start building up in the yogurt and it will come closer to the churning rod bottom of the churning rod. And then they'll take the churning rod out and remove the butter and keep it separately. That's what they do. So, in order to do that, you have to know the movement of the churning rod under your control. If churning rod behaves differently, does things differently, it won't work, right? So, similarly, this Mandara mountains should be completely under the control of the people who are churning it, right? So, at that time, Krishna is saying, it says here, that Krishna went on to the, because the Mandara mountains was not losing enough, he went on to the top of the Mandara mountains and he stood there with 1,000 hands to help the churning process, right? And standing there, he held Mandara mountains properly and stopped its movement. Mandara mountains movement, right? So at the bottom he is there in the tortoise form, and on the top he is standing there and controlling from the top as well and holding it properly, right? In this way, without any obstacles, they churned the milk ocean, right? At that time, from the snake Vasuki's mouth, air is coming out, right? And that was poisonous air from Vasuki. It was coming out, right? And now Asuras started feeling uneasy because they were holding the head. So it's coming out through the mouth and it was giving them trouble. Asuras could not handle that, right? So they started feeling weak because of the poisonous air that was coming from Vasugi, right? It didn't affect the demigod, Devadas, so much, right? But little bit there also, they were affected. And they also felt uneasiness because of that, right? But not to that extent like the Asuras felt. Now, Krishna did told them to hold the tail. Now Asuras can't say anything. Because Krishna will say, I told you from the beginning, you hold the tail. But you insisted you want the head. I gave you the head. Now you see what happened. This was Krishna's mood. Krishna is running the whole thing. This is supporting from the bottom as the tortoise. He's standing on the top and keeping it in balanced condition. Then he is giving the energy to Vasuki, to Devas and Asuras, all of them. And he's telling them to churn. But only Asuras had a problem with Krishna. Asuras won't listen. That was the problem, right? So they started feeling very weak, Asuras, when the poison started coming out from the mouth of the Vasuki, right? So at that time, the flowers were put from the top by the clouds. They showered the flowers to give them some relief. And there was a little bit of cool breeze also to give them to relieve them from their fatigue, right? So you can see how Asuras made the mistake of holding on to the tail, right? Had they caught hold of the tail from the beginning, right, they may not have to suffer like this. But they didn't trust Krishna. When Krishna told them, they didn't trust him, right? But they insisted that they need the head, right? So they had to accept the result also. Now, you remember Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita this in another way. Ye yathamam prabhadyande tamstadaiva bhajamyaham. Mama orpanu vartande manushya partha sarvasha. This mentality in us, that we don't want to surrender to Krishna, we want to dictate to Krishna everything, how it should be. But that is not how Krishna reacts. Demigods were surrendered to him. They just listened what they were told to do, and therefore they ultimately Krishna took care of them. Asuras were not willing to surrender. Asuras wanted to dictate to Krishna. They will decide. I will make the decision what should be. So the attitude was like that, and therefore yayathamam prabhudyandi tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. That's a relationship, right? So karmam is like that, and karma bhalam also is like that. It is in Krishna's control, everything, right? So non-devotees who doesn't believe in Krishna, don't take any shelter of Krishna, for them they have no relationship with Krishna, right? So Krishna is present in them also within, right? But they are very distant from Krishna. They are far away from Krishna, right? And Krishna's relationship with them is like this, that he is the karma bhala dadav. In other words, you do your karma. If you are entitled, Krishna will give you the result. That is the relationship between a non-devotee and Krishna. Devotee does not have a relationship like that. This is what the lesson is teaching us. Asura means non-devotee. Non-devotee's relationship with Krishna is like that. I will work very hard and I should get the result. That is his plan. But Krishna will decide how much he should get, what he should get. That decision Krishna. So his relationship, in majority of the people in this world, their relationship with Krishna is Krishna is karma bhala dadava. Karma bhala dadava means one who gives the results of karma. That's all they know about Krishna's relationship with them. That's all it is, right? So similarly, when you are meant to suffer the results of your sinful activities, Krishna will make sure that it comes to you in time, right? And So all the results of our sinful activities, when it comes to us, you can immediately understand that Krishna has sanctioned it. That's why it's coming in that way, right? Similarly, pious activities also, you will know when the results are coming, you have to take it that Krishna has sanctioned it. Therefore, it has come. Krishna is the one who makes a decision what result we should have or not, right? So here what happened, they insisted that they want to hold the head. And that was a sinful thing to do, to go against Krishna's decision. And so they got the results also. And suddenly they felt, due to that poisonous effect, they all felt unconscious and they fell, right? But the demigods, they were holding the tail and they were doing that. But they were also affected by this. But they didn't feel so bad because it was not straight away exposed to the poison from Vasugi, right? But they also felt tired. And when both of them were tired, Krishna took care of the churning business. Himself, he decided to do it himself, churning. That's the 16th verse you can see. Madhyamana thada sindur devasura varudhamai yada suthona jayega nirmamandha ajidaswayam. Right. With these two, asuras and devas, Krishna realized that nectar is not going to come very easily. So he took control of the situation and he said that he decided to do himself. And at that moment, that form of Krishna who was doing that, Shishuka Brahmarshi offers obeisances to that form. Mekha Shyama Kanaka Paridhi Sorna Vidyoda Vidyur Murdhni Brajadulalidakaja Sraddharo Rakta Netraha Jaitrair Dobir Jagadabhaide Dandashukam Grihitva Madhran Madhna Pradigiriva Shobadodro Dhridadri. In Bhagavadam you will find certain verses which are for meditation, and this is one of that. In many instances you will find verses like this. This is for meditation purposes. Those who wants to remember Krishna in a particular form, like churning the milk ocean, right? So because they didn't have enough strength, nectar didn't come, the churning was not proper. So he himself took responsibility, and without anybody's help, both head and the tail, he was holding it and he churned. And that form of Krishna, churning the milk ocean, himself holding the head and the tail of Vasuki, and that amazing form of Krishna, Sri Shukha Brahmarshi is speaking about that in this one verse, right? What are they? On his back is Mandara Mountain. He is as Kurmam at the bottom, holding it, right? Then on top he is standing there, bluish color, cloud, bluish black, and he has got this yellow garment on his waist, and his two Magara Kundalam on the eardrops, which are like a lightning, the effulgence from that, right? And overall a bluish aura around him, and long hair everywhere, and Vanamala, the garland on his neck, right? And eyes are very reddish. But still, he is, with his hands, he is giving protection to this world. And with the hand, one hand he is holding the head of Vasugi, and another hand he is holding the tail. And looking at Krishna, it appeared as though another Mandara Mountain is standing there, competing with Mandara Mountain, another Mandara Mountain, right? And that's how he looked. Mekha Shyama Kanaka Paridhi Sorna Vidyoda Vidyo Murdhni Bhrajad Dvilalidakacha Sraddharo Rakta Netraha Jaitrair Dobir Jagadabhayadai Dandashugam Grihi Tva Madhan Madhna Pradigiriva Shobhadadro Dhridadri. It's a famous verse in the Bhagavadam, and Sri Shukha Brahmarshi says and offers obeisances to that form of Krishna, of that form, right? So when that happened, it says here that next verse, Nirmadhyamana dudare budvisham maholbhanam halahalahum agrada sambhramda meenon magaradi kachava timidibagrahadi timingala gulad. He says, when he started churning, with that the aquatics in the ocean, they all were affected by that churning of the ocean, right? So they all came about, the turtles, the, what do they call the other one? Whales and crocodiles, all of them from the ocean. And finally, from the ocean came Kalagoda, the poison that came out. Kalagoda poison, right? And it is a very heavy poison, this Kalagoda poison. It came out from the churning, right? So when Mandara Mountain was moving, rotating there, the waves were very high when the churning was going on. At that time, the aquatics all got frightened what was happening in the ocean. And all the aquatics, they were running in all directions, not knowing what was happening. And finally, this Kalagodam Halahalam, Halahalahum Agrada, Kalagodam or Halahalam came, right? And Halahalam is the name mentioned there. And it came up from the ocean, right? And its color is dark, thick, bluish color. And full of foam in that. And it's poison, what came about, right? Why is it said like this? This is the question to ask, right? When we try in spiritual life, when we start our sadhana, the first thing that will come out from inside is all our impurities, isn't it? You have noticed that? That we begin spiritual life because it's actually a churning that's going on inside our mind. When we do a little bit of sadhana first, what happens is we feel that we have made some advancement spiritually now. And then you will find fault with everyone else in this world. That's the nature of a devotee. All devotees. Initially you won't say anything. But suppose you became a disciple or you became a devotee, officially I'm saying. And then next thing what will happen is you started chanting your rounds, 16 rounds or, and you're following the four principles. You yourself start feeling that you're elevated first. You feel that you're somebody now important in the spiritual world. And that kind of thing, and that means the ahankaram is started showing its colors. You're feeling a little bit of confidence in yourself, in spiritual life, and this will continue for quite some time. And that's what he's saying here, that the a sadhaka, one who is doing sadhana, this is not to blame anybody. It's just the way it is. Everyone has to go through this, right? So one who is doing sadhana, he will notice these things, and if he's sensitive enough. Normally we are not that sensitive, are we? We just do, and we want to tell the world that we have become somebody important. And that will go on like this. And that is why suddenly somebody feels a necessity to become a guru straight away in a short period of time. They are in a rush to become a guru, and that urge inside is all because of that impurities inside hasn't gone. And or they want some position in the hierarchy or whatever it is. It's all coming from there. That impurities are coming out one after the other. In pure state, you won't need all these things. Because happiness will come from the soul. Andaryami, it will come. But when you're not getting that happiness in the early days, but you have started doing the sadhana, that sadhana will create all these problems. That you want some recognition in the world, you want some, you feel the need for recognition and as well as the just to tell us that poison is this. That's why that kalavu, halahala poison is spoken here. It's for that reason. So when you look at stories, it's not that story is wrong, but the tattvam behind that is to indicate to us that in your spiritual life also, when you proceed, these things are there, that the purification has to happen first, right? So it is at the end, at the very bottom of that is Krishna. When we get churning gets very good, or when the sadhana gets very good, at some stage, the nectar will come. Krishna will come from inside, right? We have to get Krishna, not this halahala poison, right? So, for that, we have to churn ourselves within, in our heart, right? And that is this churning the milk ocean, right? So, and for doing that, what do we have? We have got these five senses of knowledge, five senses of action, right? Out of these jnanendriyam and karmendriyam, the five senses of knowledge is the devas. And the five senses of action are the asuras, right? So, and they are both there to help us. Both there to help us. So, with their help, we have to churn this sadhana, we have to do inside, right? So understand this, the subtle side of this whole thing, right? Milk ocean is the heart inside, in our heart, right? That's where the churning has to happen. All our vasanas are present in the subtle body. Both the auspicious vasanas and the inauspicious vasanas. Mostly it is inauspicious vasanas inside, which is present in the chittam, right? But if the senses of knowledge, if they have sattugunam in them, if they have sattugunam in them, then that senses will look for Satyugya Jnanam. Jnanam, knowledge in Sattugunam. If they have Sattugunam in them. So, it is this senses in Sattugunam. They are the ones called Devadas, Devas, right? Why is it said like that? In both in Upanishads and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, senses are considered to be Devas. You know, in second canto we talked about this. These are holes only, but within the holes present is the Devas. Adhishtadru Devada, they are called. You remember we said this. For the eyes it is Lord Brahma, the Devadas here. And like that for all these senses there are Devadas. I gave a list before. If you go back and look, you will find there the list. Who are the Devadas for all the senses? For both Jnanendriyam as well as for Karmendriyam. It is due to their, that is why I am saying, that this body is not like the way we think about it, isn't it? We think the body is, especially in the medicine, that is how they look at the body is different, isn't it? But from spiritual position, if you look at it, from Shastram point of view, if all these Devadas are present in us, and if they are not giving us the support, or when they withdraw, that particular department is shut down, then it cannot work anymore. So, that is the way it is understood from the Shastra. Mechanical side of it, you can fix it probably with whatever, if it is a mechanical problem. But this is not a mechanical problem in many cases, you know it is not a mechanical problem. Like you got all the medicines and whatever best medicines they have developed, they'll give it to you, but it may or may not work. And if it's not working, you can take it that there is a higher side to it, that the medicine alone, it's not purely a mechanical issue, it's more than that, right? So, Jnanendriyam, senses of knowledge, has to be Sattvaguna Pradhanam. Sattvagunam should be present in that. So, and all, they're all Devas. They're all Devas. Similarly, Karmendriyam, senses of action, right? Vaka, Pani, Padam, Palpam, Payu, they are the five different ones, right? This karmendriyam are normally concerned, considered as asuras. They are considered as asuras. Because you require both to do the things. Karmam, when most of the time, if the jnanendriyam is not right, right, karmendriyam will do the wrong thing. So always jnanendriyam has to have a control over karmendriyam. I mean, senses of knowledge must have a control of senses of action. These all you can understand when you think a little bit in a subtle level, right? So here he is saying here that you require both jnanendriyam as well as karmendriyam. With their help, you are churning the milk ocean. What is churning means? Churning means, with the help of these two, jnanendriyam as well as karmendriyam, you are engaging in sadhana of the Bhagavata Dharma, which means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, all these things. In order to do that, you need both. You need Jnanendriyam for Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, all these things. Then Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, all these things, you require the Karmendriyam. So both Jnanendriyam and Karmendriyam is required for sadhana, for doing sadhana, for Bhagavata Dharma, right? And doing that with Jnanendriyam and Karmendriyam, and eventually realizing Krishna in that way. So, sadhana performing, upasana it is called, that is what is called the churning. Churning means this upasana of doing Bhagavata Dharma, executing, that is the churning, right? And when you do that upasana, what will come on the top in our mind or in our heart, right? It won't be nectar. When we do sadhana first time, it won't be the nectar that will come first, right? Instead, all the bad vasanas inside us will start coming out. You know that, isn't it? When you start, first time, you start chanting, what happens is, the previous bad vasanas inside us won't give way easily. They will start giving trouble. They'll come and start giving trouble. Yeah. Remember I told you this story before. When we were initiated in Germany, we had a group of German devotees there. And there was one devotee, he told me this himself, right? He says, let me have the last cigarette before I get this, get the initiation, he said. You see, he wanted to get initiated and he wants to give up all that, but that asuric nature in us is coming back again and catching him. Right at that moment, he says, let me have the last one, he says, before I get initiated. So he told like this to me. And I had to think like this, you know, that's how we are. That, and some, another person said he just wants to have the last points before he goes and follow the four principles, right? Many of them have left and gone and gone back to the same old system. So the difficulty is this, that the asuric vasanas inside us, what we are habituated to, it will all give you a lot of trouble. Everything. Sex life, meat eating, alcohol, and gambling, all these vasanas are inside us, right? They will all give a lot of trouble in the beginning. It takes a long time for them to withdraw from us, right? And most of them are very powerful. So when that happens, they will come light, right? When they come, that is called kalahalam. This is how churning of the milk ocean story is to be understood from a devotee's position. The tattvam behind that is, right? When these vasanas comes out, devotees should not get disturbed over it, right? And when that poison, that when it comes out, it has to be removed by the mercy, Krishna's mercy, and that mercy comes in the form of the spiritual master. It's a spiritual master, spiritual strength that's protecting that devotee at that stage. If the spiritual master has given enough protection for the devotee, then with proper knowledge and understanding, then that devotee won't suffer from this. He will escape from that. And that is why it is his mercy is very important at that time. And and that is why he is called the Sadguru. He's called the Sadguru, right? And that is Lord Shiva. Sadashiva form. So Shiva is nothing but Krishna's Guru form. This is the relationship between Krishna and Shiva. Shiva is the Guru form of Krishna, who makes sure that the devotees get all the help what is. That is why in the story you see, Shiva comes to take the poison. It is for that reason, right? So it is at that stage, you take the shelter of the Guru. When you are in that early stages, particularly in the sadhana, when all these, what do they call it? The anartham, isn't it? There's an English word, I forget. The anarthopasamam sakshal bhakti yoga madoksha jay loga sanjanada vidwan chakre satuda samhidam. In the first canto, it says, anartham upashamam. This anartham, anartham means all these things. Our own vasanas coming out strongly.
Vices,
yeah. I don't know, is there another word? I don't know. Maybe vices, yeah. Vices is bad habits, isn't it? More. But this is gone more than that. It has become a habit in us. And it comes in the form of habit and blocking us, right? And infects our thoughts very badly. And not stops us from taking spiritual life seriously. Not able to do what is required to be done. You're not able to do it because the influence that comes from these bad habits, right? And that's what it is. So, anartha upashamam sakshal bhakti yogam adoksha jay. He says in the first canto. So, what happens is that if you take Shiva shelter at that time, because he is the Jagadguru, isn't it? That's what is going to. Now comes the his glorification, the next chapter, I think. The how Lord Shiva is glorified. In the there is a whole glorification, right? And you will see that his position is like that, Sadashiva. And so therefore, that Jagadguru taking his shelter at that moment will help in this situation. So, Guru's role is like that. Gurur anigrahenaiva puman purna prashandaye says in the Krishna says to Sudama this one, right? So, if that Jagadguru gives you the help, then only then you can complete your effort. You can succeed in your effort. So, we'll talk about it tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.